We all want to stay safe and protect each other from coronavirus. We do this by cleaning our hands, social distancing, and covering sneezes and coughs. We can also do this by wearing a face covering. Face coverings help prevent people who don't know they have the virus from spreading it to others. They should be worn anywhere it's difficult to stay 2 meters apart, like shops or public transport, or when visiting anyone who's more at risk. Wear a face covering. Stay safe. Protect each other. See hse.ie for more.
Heinz Pharmacy, Castle Street, Roscommon. Contact us on 09066 34147. We offer a wide range of in-store services. We also offer online loyalty points, so log on today to heinzpharmacy.ie. That's Heinz Pharmacy, servicing the community of Roscommon. Contact us on 09066 34147.
Best for babies, Castle Street, Roscommon, across the road from Heinz Pharmacy. And you're very welcome back to Sportsview Extra here with myself, Aidan Rafferty, and the show's as always kindly sponsored by Heinz Pharmacy here in Roscommon Town. And now we have our second week of our new hurling man, former Wexford player Larry O'Gorman. Hello, Larry. How are you?
Hello, Aidan. How are you? And how's all your listeners?
All's good. All's good here in Roscommon. Looking forward to getting back playing again. And I suppose to kick that off, milestone day for the GAA as clubs pitches reopen. That's a big, huge bonus now for clubs, and I suppose for players and coaches as well.
Absolutely, you know, they've been waiting for the last number of months for all this. Aidan, you know, everyone was itching to get back, and I will say it was probably clubs around the country, never mind my own county, we're sneaking in a few train sessions here and there as well, you know. Breaking the rule, but doing it in the right manner that everyone was safe and well from us.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, it's very exciting times, especially down around Wexford here, because our championship is starting in a couple of weeks' time, so the draws are made, and guys are only itching to get back. And as I said here earlier, earlier on, I was just saying to you that I was out my clubhouse this morning, getting everything ready, getting the showers on, getting all the toilets and getting the training gear ready, and then getting the pitches cut and getting marked up and all. So it is big time down around this area, because as I said, people are very, very excited about getting back. And you know, we thought we wouldn't see this happen, and you know, thankfully things are improving. But you know, as we're all aware, that we have to be careful and obey the law and the rules or whatever's set out there by the GAA and the restrictions with COVID and stuff like that. So it's certainly something new. And to me, it sometimes remind me when I was a little kid. I remember when I was due to get a bike at Christmas time, and I was so excited I couldn't sleep the whole night. So I may bet that some of the GAA players down around this area, especially in our club, were so excited and couldn't wait to get back.
And down in Wexford, it was the case when Christmas morning was coming, you couldn't wait to look under the tree and see Hurleys and Slithers and jerseys.
Well, that's the only thing I asked for every Christmas, and my parents, you know, they said I was the most satisfying kid who could ever get. If I got a hurling ball or a hurler or a jersey, they knew that I was happy no matter what the other kids got. You know, and
that's it.
And that's where my passion all grew from, and that's what you'd be hoping. It's a new generation of kids that we have to get, instead of getting iPads and laptops and iPhones and everything else. You know, if you put a hurling ball underneath their Christmas tree, maybe that would benefit them more in the long term of life.
That's it. And there's a lot for clubs to take into account now. There's, I've seen return to play protocol. And of course, there's this module that has to be done before players return to play as well. The e-learning, the GAA learning. There's a lot to be done before players can return.
Yes, there is. But you know, thankfully, I just see within my own club, you know, anyone that's on any committee or over any team, all the adults had to do it first, and then they got the players to do it. And if you didn't do it, then you weren't allowed in. You're not allowed into the grounds. So I was just looking at the camogie list coming in today. My little ones play camogie, and I was just looking at the list, and most parents and most coaches and everyone else have it all done. So it's great to see that. You know, we are aware, as you said earlier, that, you know, there could be consequences if things are not done right or whatever. But, you know, it's a rule and it's the law or whatever you want to say, brought in by the GAA, and it's only right that you obey it. You know, so it's good in one sense that, you know, hygiene is very important in terms of what's happened over the last number of months. We don't want to see a backlash of that. And if it did happen, well, then, you know, you could say it's curtains for the GAA World this year.
That's it. And, of course, the one thing that the players will be really looking forward to returning to play. And, I suppose it'll be a new normal, really, because, I suppose a lot of players will be, would have done their own bits of work at home and all that. And that'll come to fruition now when it returns this weekend or this Monday, next Monday.
Yeah, I will. Overall, in general, I know within my own club and a few other clubs that are close by to us, I have got a feedback from them to say that, you know, that they've all been out doing a good bit of training themselves singly and maybe in doubles, you know, whether it's at home or in the field next door or in a running track nearby or whatever. So they were all itching to get back and to do a bit in terms of keeping themselves to a certain level of fitness or whatever. But it will be a bit strange when they come back into packs when they start training and when they start doing these fitness tests and everything else, then they'll find that, you know, maybe what they did, it would help them and did help them to get to this level. But, you know, over the next 3 or 4 weeks, you know, I pity all these lads that are training for senior hurling championship or senior football championship down here, because it's going to be a short championship and the trainer and managers that come in, you know, they'll certainly put the skis underneath them and try and get their fitness levels up as quick as possible, because we're in a knockout basis down here. There's three in a group, and if you lose the first one, you know, you're definitely going to struggle. You definitely have to win the second one. If not, there's no relegation, which is a good thing, all right, but, you know, you will be to be two teams relegated for next year, but there's no relegation this year, so it's more or less a knockout. If you lose the first one, you get a second chance, and if not, you know, so that's why it's important, and lads have been told that for the last number of weeks. They weren't sure what way it was going to be run, but they had an idea that it was going to be some kind of championship, so they took a gamble in terms of getting their fitness levels up, so it'll be interesting to see now when they all come back. It's not only club people. It'll also be interesting to see what way inter-county players come back, you know, because there's a lot of inter-county players that will be very, very fit compared to some other players within the panels. It'll be interesting to see are they all on the one wavelength now. And, you know, we're just wondering, will the skill of hurling or the skill of football be the winner this year rather than the fitness of everything?
That's it. And hopefully the matches will be the headline in sport rather than the COVID-19 and the late return of course that'll be the other thing for players as well. It'll be unusual playing in the late half of the year rather than during the summer months.
It'll be very unusual, you know. Most teams would be in the later half of the year, and they might be running out in the O'Byrne Cup, or they might be running out in the Welsh Cup, or a few little mini tournaments that have played before Christmas. You know, it'll be a little bit unusual, but I remember back in our day, we used to play half the National League before Christmas and the other half after Christmas.
That's right, I remember those days.
yeah, it was, you know, I'm talking about playing, and I remember we actually went to play up in County Down, and we played to play down up in Ballygalgar or Ballycran in a National League game. It nearly took us a day and a half to get up there with the amount of snow and whatever storm that hit the country. But we eventually got up there and to play the game now, and be quite honest, it was quite hard in the middle of nowhere. I think it was Ballycran, but geez, it was cold, it was freezing, it was wet, it was dirty, it was boggy. You say to yourself, thank God I'm not playing in M games anymore. And of course, we all know the condition of pitches throughout Ireland now is completely different. So the level of hurling won't be too bad at that time of the year. You know, the level of fitness will be okay because they've had a break and now they can pump up the volume again, as one would say. And as I say, the condition of pitches around the country are excellent. So it'll be a bit strange, you know, to be travelling to matches, you know, in the dark, or even going to see some championship matches, you know. So it'll be a little bit different for us for people going to support them, because we're not going to show what kind of weather we're going to face into the months of the year as well. So it'll be interesting, it'll be challenging, but hopefully you can get the season done and, you know, as someone else already called it, a mini All-Ireland, get it over and done with, get it sorted and roll on next year to get the whole thing back up and running properly.
That's it. And of course, another thing of the return to play as well is every club around the country has to have COVID officers as well for each team in that club. That takes a lot of organising as well for both in football and hurling. And if you have a lot of different teams, like some clubs have A, B and C teams, so, you know, to get COVID officers for all of those teams would be can be difficult enough.
It can indeed, you know. As I said earlier, we're all delighted, we're all looking forward to going back, and it's okay for the players to come back and sign themselves in or register themselves in or whatever the case may be. But yeah, for the person that has to take records and details and stuff like that now, it's a little bit, I won't say a little bit too much, you know, it has to be done, and that's the bottom line, but it's going to be very, very unusual. I remember years ago we used to do a roll call in school with the teacher, and we used to do it morning, noon and evening early, so we're more or less going back to that roll call again, you know, with the youngsters, but it will, because we've three or four teams training tonight now on a Wednesday night, the first night back, and it's going to be quite difficult now for a lot of people, because, you know, some people will just drive in and walk straight out onto the field. There's other fellas will drive in and get hogged out in the dressing room, and there's other guys will just come over and walk out or cycle out. So it'll be a little bit difficult to get it. It has to be done, and that record has to be taken, and everyone's name has to be written down proper. So you're right, man. It's not only my club; it's throughout Ireland. It's going to be a massive task for everyone, and it has to be done. You know, and records have to be there, because if an issue did break out or something, we'll be another course of us, you know, then at least they'd be able to trace it all down.
That's it. And of course, we have the thing that, you know, counting the cost of summer without GAA clubs or without GAA championships. I mean, we've seen it on the news there the other day, where there's no matches on during the summer in Amore Park. And usually there's about three or four games, during the championship that are held in Amore Park. And of course, that'll be very thin on the ground. There'll be no games this season on Ormore Park, which is tough for them.
Yeah, it is. I was just talking to one of the guys the other night. We were actually due to play at Kilkenny and Wiltshire Park there last weekend or the weekend before, you know, where you have a capacity of 18,000. So, you know, in terms of finance, you know, that's a massive loss, not only to the GAA, but to the county board as well, I'm sure, because they would get a percentage of it. But that you see that all over the country. Yes, the likes of Portlaoise is a beautiful pitch as well, of course. And, you know, Crow Park, you're talking about Parky Cleeve, Turles, you know, all these big playing areas around the country, the ones that attract most big GAA matches. Like, it's going to be small capacities at it, no matter what you look at it. So it's going to be a massive revenue loss to the GAA. But they are happy in general just to get up and running, because, you know, we will get to see a lot more games on TV and stuff like that. But overall, it'll be quite difficult and quite strange to actually go out to play in front of a small crowd if the capacity of the grounds is low. If it's a higher capacity, well, in 20 or 30,000 in Crow Park, it might make a little bit of a roar if you happen to be facing the crowd or, you know, sitting in the crowd. So, you know, Wiltshire Park is only 18,000. If it's only 20% of that, we could be down to a small couple of thousand in Wiltshire Park, which would be a good scatter in Wiltshire Park. It would be very, very unusual a sight to see, you know. But I remember back in 96, would you believe it, we played Kilkenny in the first round of the championship in Crow Park. Would you believe it, there's only 14,500 people at the match?
Well, you know, for a game like that, like with two great hurling matches.
It was the big year. It was the biggest year Wiltshire had. Well, we didn't realise that the year was going to turn out in the way it did. But if you go back and think of that match, there was only something like 15,500 or 16,000 in Crow Park. Now, it was a great day for us. We beat Kilkenny, and whatever supporters we had, I think it was 15,000 to 1,000 supporters. But no one expected us to beat them. You know, I just thought it was unusual. When it was all over, I was sort of looking around at Crow Park myself, and I said, wow, there's very little here. You sometimes don't pay attention to when you're playing or whatever. But when it was all over, you said, was it that low? I couldn't believe it was that low. But when you're in the frame and all that. And so this is what's going to face. Now, club players would be the very same. They're going to face a small capacity of attendance at matches as well in some locations when they're trying to run off a lot of games over the next number of weeks.
That's it.
It'd be a little bit unusual for players to face up to that as well. And if you start to look at the Premiership there the last couple of weeks or last week or so, you know, if I look at some of the highlights or something like that, I'd say it looks very unusual.
Yeah.
It looks very unusual to see players trying to play at their top best in front of no crowd whatsoever. It must be very, very hard, even though they are professionals and have no choice to do it. But in terms of our lads down here or up there where ye are and right around the whole country, you know, it's going to be quite unusual for lads to get themselves geared up for the big games, you know, to get out there. It's different when you're playing Kilkenny in whether it's in Wexford Park or Nolan Park, and you have a capacity of 18 or 20,000. Tell you one thing, the hair is standing on the back of your neck no matter where you're playing them. So that will be very interesting and very unusual to see how it all turns out this year.
That's it, because I suppose back in 96, those were the days where the crowd used to go out on the pitch, and that was the ultimate thing, you know, after you win in a game and your fans come out on the pitch and they say well done and all that. That's what it's all about as well, to see the smile on the fans' faces and things like that. Now, of course, we know they can't do that now, but I suppose around in the grounds around the country it's the same. You know, after matches, the fans usually go on the pitch. But I suppose that's something that probably won't happen this season, which would be a sad thing for the players and the fans.
Yeah, that was in the letter that we got to our club as well. You know, don't expect too many people to be running on the field when games have been played or games are over, like that, you know. And as you said, throughout the country as well, Aidan, you're dead right, 100%, it'll be very, very unusual, especially at club matches now. I see county semi-finals or county finals where the crowd are running in around the place, and that will be stopped. And back in my day, I would say, you know, to see, if you go back and look at especially Leinster final in 96 and the All-Ireland, but 96 was quite... I was quite ecstatic, to be honest now. If you just go back and look at the last few minutes of the end of the game, the Leinster final in 86, there was just thousands upon thousands of supporters coming in onto the field, and they sucked up the players and they wrapped themselves. It was most unusual scene to look at it. But to be down on the ground playing, you know, it was just like 10 or 15 people around you. You can't see the 30 or 40 or 50 people around you. You know, it was most unusual. But when you go back and look at it, you'd often say to yourself, Jesus, how do players survive all that?
That's it. And before we go as well, there a few weeks ago there, he had a fundraiser there at Faith Harriers, the Win the House fundraiser, and it was very successful there. Margaret, a colleague of mine here, she did a great interview with you as well, and I hear it was very successful.
Oh, it was in the end, you know. Unfortunately, just before Christmas, we had a date to run the draw, but we didn't quite reach our target. Some people wanted to go ahead with the draw, but the management committee decided, no, let's hold it off. The tickets are bought, they're still in the draw, so not to panic, we will go ahead with the draw. We got a little bit of stick, to be quite honest, but it wasn't major. It wasn't a major thing, and of course then we had to postpone it because of the COVID. We were just allowed to run it for another while because we weren't allowed to run it because of the situation in terms of grouping and stuff like that. So I did. It was a success in the end. We ran it there a couple of weeks ago. There's a young lady in Dublin, which was fantastic news. She's only after married, and she's saving for a mortgage for her house, living with her mother. So it was very, very delighted. I was very delighted to hear someone like herself had won it. You know, that's no disrespect to anyone else who won the ticket, but it was great for her because she said she'd been saving for a number of years for a mortgage, and it was a fantastic way to celebrate it and finish in the end. So she's a lucky lady. She has a mortgage-free house now for the rest of her life, and that's what it's all about. You know, they say dreams sometimes don't come true, but the dreams certainly came true for her.
That's it, and that's the nice thing when you see something like that, because that means the money that they would have had to get for a mortgage, they don't have to worry about paying that back, and they can just get on with living their lives, and I suppose debt-free now because they won that house.
Oh, absolutely, yes, Aidan. Yeah, because, you know, please God, when they go and have a few children in life, that they might be able to, because the money they don't have to spend on the mortgage, they might be able to have a chance in life to put their kids to college or university, which is fantastic. So that puts them in a fantastic position. So, you know, we were up there the other day, presented her with the keys and all that. She was very emotional, and, you know, very she said she had driven out twice every day since she won the draw before she officially got the keys. So she was just over the moon about it, and you feel absolutely thrilling over the moon for, you know, you'd have to be there to meet the person in general, you know, and the handshake and the hug and everything that she shared among everyone was just something to say, well, she really meant what she said when she said this is the dream of a lifetime.
And it's something like that that makes, you know, it just goes to show you, you know, what the GAA can do, like when something like that happens, something like a competition, winning a competition, what it can do for someone.
Oh, absolutely. You know, see, well, we had set out a plan maybe a year prior to that.
Yeah.
In terms that we were trying to fundraise to finish off, as I said to Margaret earlier on in the year, we were trying to fundraise to raise money to finish off our complex in the Harriers. We built a complex with phase one and phase two. And we actually almost have completed phase one at the moment. And it was going to take definitely 200,000 in general to tarmac it and fence it off and finish the whole upstairs wheelchair lift and everything in it, so it's definitely going to cost us up to around 200,000 in total. So our aim was to get a little over that, and we actually broke that barrier. So I think we've done well over 350,000 we made in the end which is remarkable. So now we can do a little bit more work within the club, but then again, we're not just going to spend it overnight because we know it's a long-term plan. We've started our camogie team the last number of years, and they're getting stronger and better, and we'll have to do a little bit of repair work within the grounds of our complex and the grounds of the pitches. So the money will be well spent, and it won't be going towards, you know, things that are not necessary for the club. And if the senior players have been told if they want money for new gear and new stuff or whatever, that, you know, don't stop.
Because we do
Hurling Classic, and we have a few little things that are going on at the moment as well. We're going to continue there because it's the Hurling Classic is a fantastic occasion for within the club. It's a great sort of a little bond to get together with lads with no pressure going off to play a bit of golf. And we do another cycle as well. The Greenway is down in Waterford. It's a fantastic idea. And it's mainly the youngsters and the parents. We all travel down on the Greenway, and you pay a fee then to go on the Greenway or whatever, the whole lot. And we could raise 6,000 or 7,000 from that.
That's it, and it's it just goes to show you when you plan things properly, the funds that can be raised and the things you can do with that money when it's raised.
Well, that's the most important thing out of it. That's exactly what we said. The most important thing that we aimed for. We get this money because the money that we've been looking for and asking for the last number of years off of people within our own county, to be quite honest, within our own town even, because we're based in a town here in Wexford Town. But there's 4 or 5 GAA clubs, there's 4 or 5 soccer clubs, there's a rugby club, there's a cricket club, there's so many clubs and activity going on within your own town that, you know, it's quite hard and difficult to be going around asking them people week in and week out to be buying county development tickets or fundraising tickets or certain stuff. So, you know, it's great now that we can take that pressure away from ourselves.
That's great. That's great, isn't it?
Oh, it's brilliant, though. So we don't have to go knocking on anyone's door and we don't have to ask them. We keep our own little club lotto. We have a majority of people doing it online, the club lotto and stuff like that. So we've, you know, going to show you, we've one old man down here, the fantastic one of the founder members nearly of the club, you can nearly say now, Kevin Murphy. He's 80-something years of age. He goes out and he sells 150 buckets of tickets a week.
Wow, that's fair going, isn't it?
And he just walks around to all the shops and all the locations. He does it every Monday morning, drops all the tickets off then, and he picks up the old ones, drops off the new ones. It's quite remarkable when you have someone like that within the club. So there's little things that we have going on within the club, because certainly we will need money in terms of running electricity and paying off rates and stuff like that. But the money that we fundraise through this Win the House competition, you know, that will be definitely well spent. And, you know, it's great to go back and show the people within the country and within the county, within the country, you know, this is exactly what we've done with the money that you supported us on. And we really appreciate it for all our help. So, you know, we did run, we ran a little program there maybe 2 or 3 years ago, was the buy a block competition. So you just buy a block and we put your name up on the wall within the clubhouse. So we sold quite, I think we made about 17 or 18,000 on that.
Fair play.
You know, so, and that's great now, because now we're almost completed the whole building now. So no matter who bought the block, you can come into the new clubhouse and see your name written on the wall on a block.
That's fair. That's nice, so, isn't it?
It's nice. And, you know, you have GAA clubs, you have people that just love GAA, and you have people that within the club love GAA, people that played with the club that their parents have passed away and stuff like that. And it's a little memorial thing up on the wall for yourself to say, yeah, look, I support you, I helped you all along. And it just goes to show you the strength of the GAA that's within the country. And we're all well aware of things that have happened, you know, over the last number of weeks, of course, and the last number of months and last number of years, when there's a death within your own parish, within your own community, within your own club. It just shows you the strength of the GAA world, how the way they're able to unite together and support one another and keep that bond together to let everyone know that, you know, we are here for you no matter what you need.
That's it. Thanks very much for doing the hurling review with us this week. And I was thinking maybe next week we can look ahead to the Wexford Hurling Championship, the Senior Hurling Championship, and I suppose the teams that are in it, and you know, who you tip, and you know, the best teams in it, and things like that. So we might do that next week.
No problem, man. Okay. And sure, look at it. It's only in the next couple of weeks we'll be talking about Inter County, so we'll have a lot more to talk about in terms of matches when the season kicks off, then it'll be very interesting to see whether it's Kilkenny or Tipperary or Wexford or Cork, you know, will turn up trumps in the end. So it'll be very interesting, same in terms of football, you know, will the whole COVID thing level out the playing field in terms of fitness level, as I said earlier on in your programme. You know, will the skill of the game and the speed of the game and the passion of the game win out? You know, because a fellow told me, the great Ned Wheeler, if anyone ever look up Ned Wheeler, he's a great man, for a hurling man from our club, and he also won All-Irelands for Wexford back in the 50s and 60s. He said when he was playing, it was a very interesting quote by him, he said when he was playing hurling back in his day, he said it was 75%, yeah, in your head and 25% in your feet. So you do all the thinking, all the hurling in your head, brain, you know, whatever comes to you, you act on it straight away. He said in today's game, he said, Larry, it's reversed. It's gone 25% into your head and 75% into your body, where the guys are training 4, 5, 6, 7 nights a week and trying to peak for certain big games, he says. He said it's the most unusual thing he ever seen, and he said he can't see it last.
That's it. Well, thanks very much. We look forward to talking to you about the Wexford Hurling Championship next week.
No problem, Ian. God bless, and thank you a million.
No problem. You're more than welcome. Thanks very much. And that was Larry O'Gorman, former Wexford hurler.
94.6. This is Ross FM.
Hi all, it's Robbie here. I'm here to make an ad about bags. Yes, bags. Well, folks, I have to be honest with you. The only bags I know about these days is shopping bags. So I'm leaving this ad all up to the mixed bag pro herself, Martina, who knows everything about bags. Over to you, Martina, to explain it all.
Thanks, Robbie. If you fancy being the proud owner of your very own designer handbag, then head over to rossfm.ie/fund and donate as little as €5 to be in with the chance of winning some valuable prizes, including a beautiful Michael Kors designer handbag. So forget shopping bags, think designer handbags. Get your name in the draw today on rossfm.ie/fund. You'll be glad you did. Now, Robbie, no more talk about shopping bags.
Yeah.
Hello and you're very welcome back to Sportsview Extra with myself, Aidan Rafferty, and the show is as always kindly sponsored by Heinz Pharmacy here in Roscommon Town. Well, next up we have a lady on the line called Antoinette. They are doing a fundraiser in aid of Crumlin Children's Hospital, and it's an event called Tour de County. And to tell us more, we have Antoinette. Hello Antoinette, how are you?
Hi Aidan, how are you doing? Lovely to speak to you.
And the same to you, yeah. There's been so many fundraisers going on, I suppose, during COVID-19 to raise money for various charities and that. And this is a very worthy one. Can you tell us a bit about how you came up with the idea?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, we operate. I'm involved with CMRF Crumlin. I'm the head of community fundraising there. So we are the fundraising body for Crumlin Children's Hospital, now known as CHI Crumlin. And we would, raise funds annually. We need to raise about 12 million in funds to support the hospital. So obviously this year has been a very, very different year for everybody. And we've obviously lost a lot of events, and there are a lot of events that couldn't take place due to the COVID restrictions. But the need is still there. So we decided to, I suppose, look around at what was happening, and obviously some people have more time on their hands this year, and there's a lot of people out and about. We were very, very lucky with the weather for a good portion of the initial lockdown. So it gave people an opportunity to be out and about and cycling. So we've been involved in lots of different cycling events over the years. So we figured, you know, Tour de County is a really, really nice idea. It's for people who just want to get out on their bike. You can get around the countryside. I think we all discovered more about what's within 5 kilometres of our area over a number of weeks, and now obviously those restrictions have lifted significantly. So it's an opportunity to people get out and about with friends, with colleagues, with family, explore, and then raise funds for the children that really need it that are attending Crumlin. And indeed our colleagues in Temple Street are also running a Tour de County as well. So it's just really to give people an opportunity to support the hospitals at this time, and meanwhile get active and get out.
That's it, because I suppose really for yourself as a children's hospital as well, there's a lot of vulnerable kids with various medical conditions and diseases and things like that. So I suppose during COVID-19, you would have had to take extra precautions to protect the kids from things like COVID-19.
Absolutely. I mean, within the hospital, obviously, there were, of course, extra precautions, as there would have been in all the hospitals. And, there would have been restrictions on visiting and limited number of parents that could be with the children. So that had a huge effect. And obviously, the staff in the hospitals had new ways of working in terms of social distancing and infection control and things like that. So they've really stepped up there, and it's been really, really a learning for everybody, and it's been handled very well. But we're also very conscious. We get a huge amount of support in fundraising from families who have had children in the hospital or who would indeed be attending now. And of course, those families would have been extra careful in terms of COVID-19. So very much staying at home and cocooning and isolating. So for those around them, now that restrictions have lifted a little bit, I suppose it's an opportunity to reconnect, and also for friends and family who feel that they want to do something to support, families with vulnerable children who attend the hospitals. I suppose it's an opportunity to get out there and try and raise funds to support into the hospitals, which are very worthwhile, you know.
That's it, because I think the one key thing that a lot of hospitals needed was PPE. And of course, you know, the PPE equipment doesn't come cheap. So that's where fundraising comes in as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we did a campaign at the beginning, you know, in terms of just a COVID-focused one, which was, I mean, obviously there was great support going into the hospitals, but with the timing of everything, it was a real operation for everybody to make sure everything was covered. And then now with the different ways of working and different testing and all that needs to go on, we normally, within the hospitals, we fund into, you know, equipment, some services, some therapies. Also, we fund a huge amount of research in the National Children's Research Centre, which is there beside Crumlin. So there's a whole host of things that need to be funded continually, you know. So COVID added an extra layer on top of that in terms of finance that's needed, and then also in terms of the ways of working. So everything that's being done in the hospitals, I suppose, has to be thought of in a different way. The number of people who can be present, different training and obviously wearing of PPE and everything. So, you know, I suppose the last thing that anybody wants to worry about is funding. So where we can, or where our great supporters can step in and help with funds, that's a real benefit, you know.
That's it, because, I mean, between yourselves and Temple Street Children's Hospital, you nearly have to, as regards Children's Hospitals, you nearly have to cover a lot of the country, don't you, for kids all over the country?
Yeah, completely. I mean, if you look at the figures, I mean, there's probably up on over 250,000 to 300,000 children who between the two hospitals. And, you know, every county in Ireland is represented. I actually looked at it the other day in terms of the different spread, and, you know, hundreds of children from Roscommon would be attending. Luckily, they might be attending once for something, but a lot of children are attending repeatedly throughout their lives, you know, whether it's for a very serious condition or for outpatient appointments. So it really touches every village, every town in Ireland, Crumlin or Temple Street. People have experience of driving up the road to get there, you know. So, and the support is always amazing, you know, that we get from people throughout the country. So I suppose this is just another way for people to see if they can do something. I mean, as I said, some people have more time on their hands. Some people might have less, depending on what job they're working in or conditions at the moment. But whatever anybody can do really makes a difference, because we find with fundraising, it all comes together. So if somebody can raise €50, that's amazing. If somebody can raise 500 or more, that's amazing. But when it all comes together, it really, really makes a huge difference. So that's where we, I suppose, get the support and the energy from the community.
That's it. And of course, I have to say something as well. I'm 44 now, and when I was 7 years of age, I had two hip operations. One was I think it was Portes they called it, you know, for my hip.
Well,
and I had an operation to put in a pin to keep it in place, and then another operation to take it out. But the physiotherapy and the treatment I got and everything, it was excellent in Crumlin's Children's Hospital. So that's why I was kind of delighted to do an interview with you, you know.
So you know all about that journey that people are making every day of the week, you know, from different households all around Ireland. People are getting in their cars or maybe on a bus or whatever, and they're traveling up the road, and, you know, they're getting unbelievable care and from amazing staff in all the hospitals. So it's really nice to be able to support into that, and for everybody to, I suppose, put their shoulders to the wheel, especially when times like this and fundraising has been affected, you know.
That's it. And it was like 1983 or so that I had the operation.
Well,
so it was a good while ago, and a lot of changes, I'm sure, has been made.
Yeah, and a lot of progress has been made. I know in Crumlin, you know, and obviously in Temple Street as well, we would have funded into the upgrade of different wards. At the moment, actually, in Crumlin, there's an upgrade going on of the outside. Probably have been well familiar with that.
Yeah.
Some of it probably hadn't changed that much, but it's being upgraded at the moment just to allow more space and better facilities there. So, you know, that is funded through fundraising and various different wards, from the St. John's Cancer Ward to the Heart Centre, are all funded. You know, a huge amount of the upgrades are funded through fundraising. So the difference, if you were to walk in there today, to what you remember, would be huge. And a lot of that is down to the great work done by people out and about around the country.
That's it. And of course, I suppose, really, going back to the event itself, is it over a couple of months, or what way does that does the thing? Can you do it in your own time or your own distance, or is there certain regulations, or is it whatever you like yourself? Or
So what we're looking at a couple of different options, because people have different, you know, situations. So some people might want to do it with their kids and do a short spin. Some people might want to set themselves a challenge for the month. So we're rolling out some of that, and some of that is on our website on cmrf.org or templestreet.ie. And so people can choose their own, or they can set a target, and we're setting some targets as well. So if people want to do X number of miles within the month of July. They can do that, and we're putting together some prizes as well that people can achieve if they, when they achieve their target in terms of the miles and fundraising. So it's really, I mean, we don't want to put a limit on anybody. I mean, some people have already signed up to do Mizzen to Mallon, which is a huge one. Other people are doing something around their local neighbourhood. So, I mean, no more than the children of attending any hospital. Some need more and can do more than others. So it's up to families themselves to decide. We don't restrict anything, but obviously if you're an elite cyclist and you want to take on a huge challenge, that would be very welcomed. But if you're a family and you want to be involved, that's an element as well. So if people want to go to the CMRF website or the Temple Street website, there's more information there in terms of how they can get involved.
That's it. Or I'm sure email addresses and phone numbers and all that will be on it as well. So I suppose this year, when did the event kick off, or when was it launched?
Yeah, just in the last week or so. So we're looking at it over the summer. Obviously, the weather complying, you know, a nice weather is lovely to be out on your bike. It kicked off, and we'll be running it over the month of July and August. So as I said, you know, some people might set themselves the target for July to do X amount of miles and clock that up for the children. Other people might prefer to do a one-day thing where they do 20 kilometres to their local village. Even better, again, if they haven't got on a bike in years and they suddenly are inspired to do so. So we love to hear all the stories, you know, the great things that people are doing around the country, and people love to hear that as well. So we put that out on our social media as well, just to connect in with why people are taking on the challenge and what they're doing, you know. So it's always good to hear what's going on around the country.
That's it. And there's no minimum amount or maximum amount that you have to raise. It's all about whatever people can do. Like, is it done like on a sponsorship card where you go looking for sponsorship?
Yeah, there's an online platform on Just Giving. So absolutely. I mean, people can choose to take part and say, you know, they can sign up to say, I'm going to do X amount of miles in July and raise an amount around that. Or they can say, you know what, I'd like to do something. I don't have the capacity to do X amount of miles, but I'll do what I can do. So it's flexible like that.
That's very good. Well, listen, thanks very much for taking the time out to do the interview with us. And in a few months' time, when it's over and that, we might get back onto you and see how it went and see how much you raised.
Absolutely, we'd love to speak to you again, and we can let you know the impact and what the funds can actually do and can achieve in the hospital. So we'd love to come back and let you know all about that.
That's great, and if you keep in touch with us, then we'll let us know what the story is, and we'll do an interview with you then.
We'll definitely do that. Thanks, many, for your time, Ian.
Okay, no problem. Thanks very much. And
Take care. That was
Antoinette from the Crumlins Children's Hospital doing a fundraiser to raise funds.
Saw you at an airport, ticket in your hand. I got a feeling in my heart I didn't understand. Something in the way you were, something foreign in your eyes, made me wish that I could share one moment of your life. Mysterious woman, wonder, did you see the kind of spell you put on me? Mysterious woman, I wish I could find the key to the kind of spell you put on me. The room's full of faces, but you stood out from the crowd. People go in places far away beyond the clouds. Were you from the streets of Paris or the coast of Italy? Or were you from as far away as the Gulf of Araby? Mysterious woman, I wonder, did you see the kind of seductive spell you put on me. Mysterious woman, I wish I could find the key to the kind of spell you put on me. There was no way of knowing if I'd ever see you again. But this brief, so brief encounter will always stay with me. I will always treasure the bittersweet memory. Mysterious woman, I wonder, did you see the kind of spell you put on me? Mysterious woman, it'll always be a mystery, the kind of spell you put on me.
Hello and you're very well. Welcome back to Sports View Extra. And now we have an interview with Fiona Gavin. And Fiona is the current manager of the Roscommon Under-16 Ladies Gaelic football team. Hello, Fiona, how are you?
Hello, Aidan. I'm fine, thanks.
No problem. Thanks very much for coming along and doing the interview with us today. So, yeah, so you're currently the Roscommon Ladies Under-16 manager, but where did it all begin? Where did it all begin, I should say, and how did you get interested in sports?
Well, I suppose I come from a very sporting background. From my parents, my dad played football with St. Bridget's and Roscommon, and he managed Roscommon Minors to actually the one of county final way back when. But I actually seen him play football over 40s with Roscommon one time. That was the last game I think he played against Mayo. And my mum, she was a Wexford woman originally, and I always had a keen interest in the GAA, of course, with hurling and being big in the county. And she was part of committees growing up with the community games, and she drove us, I suppose, all around the country and the county and country, like all good Irish mammies. And we rewarded her back in 1991 when we won the under-15 All-Ireland in the community games at the soccer. So, yeah, my parents are a big influence with all of us. I'm one of five siblings, four girls and our baby brother. And we all were encouraged at a young, very young age to play sport. We all played soccer and Gaelic through the years. So the parents are a huge influence on me.
So there was no escaping the GAA bug in your household anyway?
Definitely not. We were brought to matches every weekend, and if there was none on the none that we could go see, would be always on the television.
That's it. And I suppose, like, as everything, it all starts at club level and then you progress to county level. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, well, I played all ages underage with St. Bridget's, and we weren't that successful really underage. In 92 we got to an under-16 county final, and then there was a junior final in 94. But the club disbanded then after that from 94 to 98, so it was mostly soccer from then till we got back in 98. And but after that we had great success. I suppose our biggest success was the club intermediate All-Ireland, and we won that in 2004. That was a huge success for the club, and we made history there, being the first club in Roscommon, I suppose, winning an All-Ireland. So that was a massive success. And then we went on to win 8 senior titles. So we still haven't bettered Pierce's, who won 9. We done 5 in a row, and that was a great achievement. And with 5 Connacht runner-ups as well, but Carnacon beating us every time nearly there.
Yeah, but they have very serious talent there in Carnacon, don't they, in the ladies, in ladies football.
Oh, massive talent. We had a huge panel back then with Cora Staunton being the top woman in her day at the time, and Marta Carter. You had loads of, nearly the whole Mayo team, I suppose, that had huge success with Finn Murray and that at that time was, that's what we were coming up against. So it was very, very hard. We could never beat them down, but we tried our best. We came close on a few occasions, but not to succeed, unfortunately.
But that's it. But I suppose really when you look at that Carnacon team, you know, she went on and, she got to play, go over to Australia and play Aussie rules, which is, you know, when you're used to playing kind of part time or that, you know, playing GAA and then, or LGFA, I should say, ladies Gaelic football, going over to play, like, that transition from part time to full time professional training. But, I read her book and, I saw in an interview she was doing, she really loved it and, you know, everything was, you know, the facilities that they had and everything.
Oh, I'd say they have fantastic facilities and of course the weather as well and the barbecues and all that go with it. But it's great success to see women like that in the sport, that they're getting paid and getting contributions that, you know, because like everybody, they put in the time and the effort and it's all about the training and stuff you put in, you know, it doesn't come off the bat. I'm sure Cora, like the rest of us, put in a lot of time outside of her training hours in herself. On the field, you know, practicing or whatever it is.
That's it. And I mean, it's great to see the growth in ladies Gaelic football as well. I mean, you've seen over the last 5, 6, 7 years now, the, how popular it's got. And that can be seen like steadily progressing when you see All Ireland final days and even like the club competitions as well. There's an increased, interest in it, which is great for the sport.
Yeah, it's massive, and they're obviously getting the media coverage, not like we had back in our time. There was this massive now with all the games on TG Cahir, like the league and club and county games, and with all the social media and everything that's available now, it's great to see that the girls are getting promoted, because as I said before, that it's all time and effort and everybody's putting in the same as men. And you mightn't get the rewards like some do with cars or whatever else, but it's great to get noticed and seen on the television or on papers or social media.
That's it. And I suppose really that's the playing career. But then the management came calling, where you got interested in the coaching teams and all that. How does your interest come back? You know, because some people when they finish playing, you know, they go to maybe do sports therapy or something like myself, or they do different things. But, you know, some people then prefer to go on to do management and coaching and things like that. So what was it made it interesting for you? Or?
Well, when I was playing, I never really had an interest. I never even thought of that I'd be going coaching, or I probably thought I'd be able to play forever, a bit like Chrissy O'Malley, but she's only one of a kind.
Yeah, the Ryan Giggs of the ladies football.
And Caroline Condon of the Camogie. But, unfortunately I got injured. I had a back injury and, I had to call a halt on my career. And at the time the club management asked me, to stay involved and help out in the line and help out at training with the girls. So it started from there, I suppose, at Mark Egan and Brian Lennon and Bernard Nestor and, who was part of the management team at the time, and Grace O'Brien. And then later that year, I was approached by Paddy McTague and Brian Lennon, who were in charge of the under 14 county team.
Very good.
So at the time I was a bit hesitant, because I suppose I didn't think I was experienced enough or whatever, but the guys encouraged me to come along and, you know, I noticed then when I was on the training pitch, I suppose that, you know, a lot of what you learned, you can share with the girls and, you know, get the most out of others is the main thing. And, you know, when you have played for as long as I have, and I'm lucky, I suppose I was 40 plus when I retired from football, that, you know, you have a lot there that you picked up from fantastic coaches through the years, and that you can share with others, you know. So, I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. And great bunch of young girls coming through at Roscommon.
That's it. And I suppose really at management level too, at any level, when you're managing a team or coaching a team, it's all about kind of, I suppose, not to put it a crude way, but it's kind of about getting into players' heads and getting them to buy into what you're trying to achieve. And, you know, I suppose the different styles that, like, every coach has a different approach to coaching and, I suppose, different tactics. But that's down, I suppose, to the talent you have at your disposal. But how did you find that kind of?
Yeah, and like, you know, when you have been coached yourself, there's a, you know, there's things that the different coaches have drilled into you that you'd always keep with you, or, you know, so that I suppose it's a sign of a good coach or manager that it, you know, if you could if you keep that with you and you learn and you pass it on to somebody else, and you know, it's all about giving back to the next generation, I suppose, or whatever. And like, as coaching is different, but it's still always the basics. You always have to start with the basics. So, you know, if you can develop girls as much as we can through the years, encouraging them along, and hopefully that, you know, they can continue for a long career themselves.
That's it. And I suppose that's the benefit that you had, that, like, because you had played for years with St. Bridges, you had that great experience to pass on to the girls when you started doing the coaching. And I suppose that made it easier, I suppose, in many ways.
Yeah, it does, because, you know, you pick up so much. Like, I've had very lucky through the years. We've had fantastic coaches from way back to when we started off. You know, when the club regained again in 98 to up to present. And like, St. Bridges are going through a transition now again. The girls are back, you know, at intermediate level, and I just want to encourage them all to keep carrying on, because we started back there, and you know, like, you just have to keep working hard at it and working hard, and you'll get your rewards in the end. But I know that, you know, they are putting in the training and effort, and even with the COVID, I've seen girls out running and doing their exercises around the parish, and it's great to see. And like, I really wish them all the best this year and in the future, because I had fantastic days with St. Bridges, and I love seeing them all back playing, and I'm going to be a huge supporter of them all.
That's it. And I suppose that's the fact that they're out and doing their own bits of training and things like that, when it comes back to playing, you know, that will stand to them. The fact that they don't have to start off when they go back training, the fact that they have that work done already will be a massive boost, and I suppose it'll make it easier on the coaches as well.
Yeah, it's a massive boost, and now you have the fitness apps and you have fitness online, and you know, it's very easy access stuff, but the thing is, push yourself and encourage, you know, to get going yourself. It's harder, as I always found, it's easier for someone else to run the crap out of you than do it yourself, you know.
So, even get the old treadmill out. And
so, you know, as I always say to the girls, you know, push yourself out of your comfort zone, and, you know, you get your rewards. The rewards come at the end. Once you put in the work and the, you know, and the time and effort, and, you know, work alongside your management and your coaches and your other players, your teammates, you know, it will come. But like, I do see a lot, even around town here driving in, I've seen some of the younger girls from Roscommon Gaels, and which, yeah, I have from the under 14 and under 16 team, and Declan Walsh is doing a fantastic job there with the under 14s as well, which we're very unfortunate they didn't get any football this year, only, yeah, more than ourselves. We don't know what situation we're in, but hopefully we'll try and get some sort of blitz or games at the end of the year. But the under 14s put in serious effort at the start of the year, and like, they challenge matches every second weekend, and I want to, you know, acknowledge the hard work that went in with the management there as well.
That's it.
And, yeah, so like, it's hard for underage girls, because a lot of them will be missing out on that age group for next, yeah, year. They'll be overage, and you know, so.
And in the ladies game, you were saying to me then last week or that you know, there are some of the girls that you have at your age group, and they play like under 16 minor and under 21 and senior, so they play a couple of grades. So that, I suppose it's good in one sense, as in, you know, the fitness is there, but the players have to be wary that they don't burn themselves out, yeah, by overtraining
between. That would be a huge thing, especially now that girls are way different, and the boys might go maybe one step above their age level, but girls are expected to do three or four age groups from under 16 up to their senior or intermediate, like minor in between. But it's going to be very difficult now with the, because of the lack of training and COVID, they couldn't train and running off matches and fixtures. It's going to be very, very difficult to try and get all of squeezed in. So girls have to really be careful and mind themselves, and it's up to the coaches and management themselves as well to help them along and try and not cause any burnout between them or injuries, you know.
I suppose that's where it's key, though, the likes of yourself being the coach, and of course the strength and conditioning and the rest of the backroom staff. You know, I think in Roscommon, really, in the Roscommon setup and the ladies, like, they are well managed to ensure that they don't burn themselves out, the players don't burn themselves out.
And and like with fantastic support from the county board, I have to say, you know, like from anything we needed, you know, we started off with gym sessions there at Michael O'Connor and Michael O'Connor's Fitness there in here in Roscommon Town, and at the start of the year, we put, the girls put in serious work there, and like between challenge matches and the outdoor sessions that we've had, you know, they'd all the prep done, but unfortunately we didn't get to get any competitive games. So, you know, I do feel for those girls, but like there's fantastic support if any time we needed anything from the county board, which is a huge help.
That's it. And of course, it's great to see the growth of the ladies game in Roscommon as well, with all the clubs, you know, and it's nice to see it, like, you know, the uptake of, you know, young players coming through, you know, girls taking it up younger and all that, you know, and to see, I suppose, the likes of the under 16s and the seniors, even like with, you know, the players that we have,
Jenny Higgins and things. I was lucky to work alongside both of them with the under 15 development last year, and they're fantastic girls and great role models, as is the rest of the Michael Finnern's panel. And like that, you know, they put in their time and effort, and they're great for helping out with underage when they need as well. So fair play to those girls, and I'd like to wish them all the success. And between all the age levels of minor and the success, they were unlucky last year. I think it was a point or so that they, you know, Ali Colgan and Shane Kern were over them. They lost, and between all the different age groups, you can see there will be huge success here in Roscommon once the girls stick at it and keep fighting on and do their bit themselves, and what they have to do with their coaches and their teams as well, and club is a huge thing, and school football, any sports that can keep active is huge. I always encourage all girls or kids, I suppose, to do.
And of course, a third level as well. There's the ladies equivalent of Sigerson Cup and things like that as well, which is great.
It's massive, and you know, it's growing all the time. Ladies football is growing nationwide and worldwide, because there's huge. It's huge in the United Arab Emirates, in Australia, America, Canada, and which is fantastic. It's great to see.
That's it. And I suppose for the likes of, we just mentioned Cora Staunton there, like when people see the likes of Cora being invited over to Australia to play Aussie Rules, that's another thing that I suppose people, although, you know, it wouldn't be nice for the GA, the fact that players go over, but it is another option, like, for it brings that kind of professional element, you know.
It is, and if girls want to travel, if anybody wants to travel, you know, it is a great option to have, and, you know, like, even if they're in college, they can do the GA1s, and you get football as well, and you're well looked after. I know a lot of players that have done that in the past, and there is great outlets there for anybody that would like to travel. So with football, it's great.
There's great opportunities through that. And I suppose really as well for both the men's game and the women's game, the ladies game, is that, you know, it's the social element. Like, you go in there 8, 9, 10 years of age, playing under 12s upwards, and even younger, I suppose, at some clubs. And, you know, the friendships that the girls and the lads form with each other, and they're lifelong bonds, really, aren't they?
Lifelong bonds, and like, you're friends for life. I have all friends from every different Bridget's era that I've played with, and from county as well. Like, you're friends for life, and we celebrated every win, like with our last one in Bridget's. So you have to make the most of them all. I do encourage them all. You never know when it's your last, so celebrate your wins and your losses.
I mean, you just touched on that there earlier on about, you know, you never know when it's your last, and you were saying that you had to give up playing due to injury. That's a tough, you know, like there's the difference where, you know, you have the choice and you can make the decision yourself when you feel it's the right time. But when you have an injury and that cuts your life short, you have no say in it. For medical reasons, you have to give it up, or else it could get worse. And, you know,
it is. And it is very tough. I found it hard. And like, as I said, I was no spring chicken. Like, so, you know, I was lucky and I could reflect on all I had achieved in football. So, but I have seen and come across girls over the years that are young, at a very young age, that unfortunately had to give up playing football. And it is heartbreaking, and it's heartbreaking for them. Well, like if there's plenty of girls there that, you know, would be great, and some have gone into coaching, and there are other aspects if that, you know, if the, that does happen.
Yeah, because it's the little things, like you're so, when you're playing through from a young age up to the day, you know, if you do get an injury and that, and you have to give it up, you know, there's the little things, going to training, going to matches, being part of a thing, and even when you're injured during that period, at least you know you're going to get back.
Back and get played,
but then
yeah.
When you know that, all right, this is a serious injury, you know, and you know you'll never be able to train again. But I suppose that's where the obviously nothing ever replaces playing, but I suppose coaching, and in my case, doing sports therapy, it's kind of the next best thing, I suppose.
And having some sort of involvement, you know, it's great. And as I said earlier, it's great to be able to give back to the next generation. But like, going out with injury is no easy, but there's always other options, as I said, so, you know, just keep an open mind. But like, I've made a fantastic friends, and you have a bond there for life from training hard, like you know, you'd be pushing each other along, and you know, in Bridget's we always encouraged, and we pushed each other out of our comfort zones, each other's comfort zone, and you know, when we carried each other, and we, you know, you do that as a team, and that's how you gel such a bond with girls. And like, I've the bestest friends, and I've utmost respect for every one of them, and the coaches, and all the people that put in all the voluntary work and everything behind the scenes, because without those people there would be no clubs or county or anything else. So yeah, it's a whole huge group effort.
That's,
you know?
It.
Yeah.
And even like, you know, when you do go into management, there are other opportunities in management as well. Like, you don't stop making or networking, shall we say, with other people. I mean, you know, like other teams that you play at club level, or if you, when you get into inter-county coaching, you know, you get to make friends with people from Dublin, yeah. Coaches from Dublin, and you can learn things from them. They can learn things from you. And, you know, it's.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, within the under-16 squad, there's myself and Brian Lennon and Grace O'Brien, and the three of us are from Bridget's, but then we have Jim Flanagan from Castlereagh and Justin McDonough from Ballyhaunas. So like, everybody's bringing in something different, and you're always learning. You're learning something. They're a great group we've a great management team, great group of guys there, and a fantastic PR, or with Fiona Thompson as well. I better mention Fiona. She's fantastic. She does all the hard work behind the scenes with texts and everything else, and looking after the girls and jerseys and all that. So, no, it is, and you do, and you when you're going to challenge games or blitzes, or whatever, you meet other coaches and managers, and you do make friends. And,
that's
know,
it.
Yeah.
And I suppose really, since you've started coaching as well, you know, you would have learned a lot through coaching as well, but I suppose you would have learned a lot about yourself as a person as well, and, you know, you know, the sort of person you've become up to now since you've taken it on.
Yeah, you do, because, I suppose I never had that much patience, but you have to learn to get a bit of patience, but I'm lucky now with the age group we have. They're, you know, they're a grand group, a lovely age, the under-16s, and they're a fantastic group of girls, in fairness to them. They're all very good, and they all put in a huge effort, and I just want to say thanks so much, because as I said earlier, it's very hard ending on you know, in a way that there's no competitive matches or whatever, you know.
I suppose there's always next year. I suppose you can use kind of whatever you do from now until the end of this year, it can be preparing for next year, I suppose.
Yeah, but unfortunately what happens some girls might not play football again, you know.
Or they might be overage next year.
You know, there will be a lot of them that will be overage, but, you know, that group of girls will never be together again, and that's it. You know, that's a major thing as well. But like, I'd encourage them all to keep going and play with your clubs and your schools, and hopefully they will be backed on.
They'll always be friends off the pitch.
Oh,
anyway,
they will, definitely. And I see that, you know, you see it through the years coming up, that, you know, they stick to their own club players each, and then as the weeks are going on, you can see them mingling more and mixing more, and they've a great group of friends. And like, I've had that when I played as well, and like, you know, I was lucky. I had three sisters as well on the team with me, and like, the four of us, where one was as competitive as the other.
Yeah, well, that's it. You need to have that, though. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Like, Orla was, my eldest sister is a huge influence on me. Like, she played county football, and she was on the panel in 1998 when they were in Croke Park, And like that was, she was a massive influence on me growing up, because I suppose anything Orla wanted to do, I wanted to do. Orla wanted to do. And we both spurred each other on with our competitiveness, but we were all, actually the four girls, we all were very competitive.
But I think that's a human thing though, isn't it? Like you like to, if you see someone doing well on one thing, you say, I'd like to try that.
And we're not, if we weren't afraid to push each other, we'd tell each other and we'd push it, we'd be honest and saying, you could do better than that. And, you know, and that was a major thing. But yeah, no, it was a very proud moment for us as a family, I suppose, seeing Orla in Croke Park, and that encourages all more, our older sister, you know, go and play football or whatever. So, yeah.
But now you're achieving things on a coaching level, so that's good as well.
Well, yeah, I've a 100% record this year.
Oh, that's not too bad, yeah. But, I suppose looking on to, do you reckon there'll be like a blitz or something for the under 16 girls this year? Or
it all depends on, I suppose, fixtures. You know, the county board are trying to do their best to get fixtures for clubs now, because there's so many games to run off or whatever. And I was on to Connacht, and they said they'd definitely be keeping a mind in trying to get some sort of game or blitz or something, maybe in October or whatever. So hopefully the girls, you know, it'll be a nice way to end the season if they have, you know, donned the Roscommon jersey and have a day out, bonding day or something.
Hopefully you'll be back yourself again next week, next year managing as well, hopefully.
Oh yeah, well, all going well, we'll be all back on
They'll
board.
They'll keep you on another year. But I suppose this year, for both yourself and the players, it's been frustrating that you were looking forward to this, and next thing the COVID took it away.
It has, and I suppose it's the same for a lot of teams in throughout the country, you know, and people in different sporting events all over the world. But we just have to keep positive, and I was lucky that nobody was affected. Hopefully, that things will be, they get back to normal, and you can focus on the future. There's nothing we can do about it now, I'm afraid, but it'll probably be something that will never happen again. It'll be in the history books.
That's
2020 and COVID.
That's it. It'll be a year, a different sort of a year compared to previous years, I suppose. But yeah, as you say, look forward to it next year, I suppose, with positivity, and you never know what you can achieve next year.
That's it, yeah. The only way is up, I suppose, yeah.
That's it. Listen, thanks very much for doing the interview with us, and we'll be keeping in touch with you, and hopefully we'll do a few interviews with you in the future.
Thanks, Aidan.
Okay, same to you. And that was Fiona Gavin, the manager of the under 16 ladies football team.
Good evening. Here is the news.
This is Martina Dockery. I'm here to tell you about our new daily radio schedule on Ross FM. Despite the COVID-19 emergency, we here at Ross FM will continue to bring you the best of music, news, local information, requests and dedications every day, Monday to Friday on 94.6 FM locally, and you can find us online at rossfm.ie. You may be confined to your home right now, but we'll be here to keep you up to date with all that's good in our beautiful county. So do stay tuned in the days and weeks ahead. Oh, and by the way, I'll be on with Seamus Duke and Dan Dooner on the Rossy Way in the coming days, bringing you a preview of all that's good on the telly. So don't forget to tune in to 94.6 FM, Community Radio for Roscommon.
Hello and you're welcome to this week's Roscommon GA Memories. And this week we're on about two games, two Connacht finals between Roscommon and Sligo. And to take us through those, we have, as always, Ray Lennon. Hello, Ray. How are you?
Hello, Aidan. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Yeah. Good. So that was two very good clashes, and of course two very good Sligo teams and two very good Roscommon teams on both occasions. So could you tell us a bit more about those?
I will, Aidan. And the two Roscommon have played Sligo on two occasions since the GAA was founded in Connacht Finals. One was that great victory 10 years ago, 2010, where Fergal O'Donnell masterminded one of the best Connacht Final victories for Roscommon of all time. Because, Aidan, in 2010, we were after getting relegated to Division 4 after a poor league campaign, and Sligo had beaten us by 7 points in the last league match. So Roscommon went into that championship with low expectations, and those are the sweet victories when nobody expects the team to come good, but they did, and they turned out 14 points to 13 victory winners over Mayo, over Sligo rather, in Castlebar and County Mayo 10 years ago this year. But the first game I was going to focus on was the 1947 Connacht final between Roscommon and Sligo, Aidan. And that took place in Ballina, of all places, would you believe, on the 20th of July 1947, and that was the first ever Connacht final played in Ballina, James Stephens Park, home of Ballina Stephenites, All-Ireland club champions in 2005. Of course, Ballina, home to Liam McHale, David Brady, Ger Brady, all those great players. Kevin McStay, of course, played for Ballina Stephenites for many years. He's a native of Ballina, and his brother Paul, great footballer as well, Kevin, and manager for Roscommon and St. Bridget's, of course, St. Foyle's before that. Roscommon minor team. But anyway, Roscommon won the game, Aidan. 14,000 people were at it. It was a dreadfully wet day. They talked about the torrential rain and wind. And the writer in the newspaper talked about all of the people that came to the game on bicycles, how wet they would be. And I suppose in this remove, we take it for granted. We've planes, trains, cars, automobiles to get us to matches all over Ireland, New York, London now, where Roscommon play. In those days, people relied on the bicycle a lot. I know maybe people didn't travel from Roscommon to Ballina on the bicycle, but they travelled large, long distances on the bicycle to games. You know, 10, 15 miles wouldn't be a big journey on a bike in those days, like, you know. And you think about the luxuries we have today, like, take my own father now, he cycled 10 miles into Longford town every morning for school. You know, it's unreal back in the 50s, you know, the people, the hardships they had. And for them it wasn't hardship at all. They were fit, they were strong, they were doing physical work out in the farms, so they were quite happy to do that, you know. It was no problem. But the papers talked about all the bicycles lined up and how the people were getting very wet on their journey home from the match, and of course on their journey to it. But 1947, Aidan, was a special year in the GAA because all the newspapers talk about the trip to America for the All-Ireland final. That was the year the Polo Grounds final in New York. And Roscommon winning the Connacht final put them into a great position to qualify for the Polo Grounds All-Ireland in New York. But unfortunately, they won the Connacht final but lost to Cavan in the semi-final. We'll talk about that in a moment. So the trip to New York was front and centre for the players, the management, the fans, of course, and the journalists.
But it would have been a huge thing back then, wouldn't it, really, to be going to New York for a game?
Wouldn't it be lovely if we were even talking about now Roscommon and Kerry and All-Ireland final in New York? We're all talking about the great game that Cavan played against Kerry, John Joe Riley, and all of that in the polo grounds. It could have been Roscommon. I think Roscommon were favourites for the semi-final against Cavan. They beat Sligo by 2-12 to 1-8 in the Connacht final, and then on the 3rd of August 1947, Roscommon lost to Cavan by 2-4 to 6 points in Croke Park in what was a little bit of an upset, because Roscommon were, you know, had beaten Cavan in the All-Ireland final in 1943, and Roscommon and Kerry were the two best teams in the country at the time. So Cavan, albeit they were a strong team and a force in that era, Roscommon, I think, were still the favourites in 1947 to beat them in the All-Ireland semi-final, Aidan. And you know what, Aidan? You talk about Ulster championships. You think today, in the last 25, 30 years, you talk about Donegal, Tyrone, Armagh being the main teams winning Ulster championships, and they have been in that era. But if you look at it, Cavan have the most Ulster titles. They have 39 Ulster titles. And the next in line, I think, is Tyrone with 18, Monaghan with 18, Tyrone with 17, Armagh only have maybe 12 or 13, you know, and Donegal have 7 or 8. So, like, Cavan are still, like, way out in front of any of those teams. Like, 39 they have. And between 1931 and 1955, there was something like 25 Ulster Championship Ulster Championships contested. 25, and I think Cavan won 20 or 21 of them. Like, in that era.
And remember the 2 years that they did the two in a row. Would there have been many players involved in that team those 2 years to the kind of final against Sligo that year?
There was, Aidan, and the Roscommon team was G. Dolan, and Gerry Dolan was in goals. Now, he was in goals in the final in 46, and I think he was in the final in 44 as well. Owen Zihore was in the goals in 43, if I'm not mistaken, or Owen Zihore could have been in the goals in 44. But Jack Casterly was full back in 47. He was on the 43-44 team. Bill Jackson was still there. Brendan Lynch, Bill Carless, Eamon Boland, Thalam and Jimmy Murray, Donald Keenan, Jack McQuillan, and John Nerney. So Roscommon still had, there's 10 or 11 of the team that played in 44.
I just thought that would be an interesting thing to ask, you know, because it's interesting when you're comparing teams from, we say, two in a row to that year, you know, it would have been just, you know, interesting to compare would there have been many players left from.
It was largely the same team, Aidan. Like, if you look at it, Jack Casterly, Bill Jackson, Brendan Lynch, Bill Carless, Eamon Boland, Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray, Donald Keenan, John Joe Fallon, Jack McQuillan, John Joe Nerney. They were all there nearly in 44, most of them. You know, there was still the Roscommon team of 43 and 44, really. There was a few players gone, like Owen Zihore wasn't on the team in 47. Liam Gilmartin, he played midfield in 43 and 44. He wasn't on the team that time either. I think he got TB or he got ill, he got sick. Now it could be open to correction, but I've heard from a reliable source that he got sick in 47, that he had an illness. And of course, in that era, Aidan, if we mustn't forget that TB was like what COVID-19 is today. TB was
rampant, wasn't
rampant,
it? Yeah.
Rampant. It was endemic. Whole families were wiped out of TB. I know a friend of mine from Donegal, who died last year, his name was Donal Noon, and Donal lived till the age of 94, but he had spent, I'd say, 5 or 6 years in sanatoria, and he spent a lot of time in Castlereagh in the sanatorium. That was a TB sanatorium for people sick with the TB, where they were in quarantine. And Donal didn't go to college or university, but he said that was his university, because they did so much learning, they did so much plays, quizzes, drama, writing, so much in the area of entertainment. He spent 4 years in the sanatoria in Killybegs and in Castlereagh that he learned so much. It was like being in college, and like the people that were there, they were brilliant people. So that school and an education, so it was like a third level for him. But it was very sad. A lot of people died, as I said, whole families wiped out. Thank God people recovered from it. And then Noel Brown, he became Minister for Health in 1951, and he built the sanatoria and started bringing in an eradication scheme. But TB was in the 40s what even worse than COVID-19 is today. There was no cure for it, and even it stayed in, people say it stayed in the walls of houses, like it was a very, very deadly disease. So consumption, so that's the era we're looking at, and hard times for the people. 1947 also was the year of the big snow, you know, the snow stayed on the ground right until May. It was high, there was sort of 10 foot of snow in certain places, Aidan, you know, and speaking to the older people, they said it was very, very high, the snow, and stayed a long time, but it wasn't as cold. goals. You remember, we're talking about Roscommon winning in 2010 in that kind of championship. And you remember we had the big freeze in 2010. Do you remember in Christmas time?
Oh, I remember.
The -20. So the big snow in 1947, Roscommon and Sligo playing the Connacht final, and we had the big freeze in 2010. And a year ago, Roscommon and Sligo played in the Connacht final. So if the next time we have a big winter of snow or ice, watch out, it could be a Roscommon and Sligo kind of final, and hopefully Roscommon might win it again, you know. But
yeah,
so there was the Roscommon team. But the game itself, Aidan, Roscommon won 2-12 to 1-8, and it was, by all accounts, it was a one-sided game in that Roscommon led by 1-6 to 1-1 at half time. They got a goal after 2 minutes. Jack McQuillan scored it. He was full forward. Jack McQuillan became an independent TD later on. Or he became a TD. I don't know whether he was independent or he was with a party, but he was certainly a TD. I think he was from down in the Pádraig Pearse's club, or what we have, Tuck McConnell, or down that country more. But Jack McQuillan was a star player for Roscommon in the 40s. Full forward. He got the goal. And then, would you believe this, Aidan? Roscommon got the goal, and a couple of minutes later, Sligo went up the field and a man was fouled and they got a penalty, and Frank White scored a penalty for Sligo. So it was 1-1. You know, it was 1-1 within a very short space of time. But then Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray's brother from Knockrockery, the St. Patrick's Club, as it would have been called at the time, he scored 5 points for Scammon. And of course himself and Jimmy were rampant. The paper said the Sligo were hopelessly outplayed at this juncture, and they got a point to Sligo to make it 1-6 to 1-1 at the break, and that the Sligo goalkeeper, who was B. Wickham, I think Brendan Wickham, maybe Brendan Wickham, he made 3 fantastic saves. So he was really the hero for Sligo in the first half, that he kept Sligo in the game with these saves. But they said that Roscommon had masterful play by Culhan and Boland in the middle of the field, and they reached to the clouds for balls, and the master craftsman Jimmy Murray never let a chance go a begging. So we talk about Eamon Boland was midfield, but Mick Culhan was the other midfielder in. I'll talk about Mick Culhan in a moment, because there's a whole story there as well about Mick Culhan. And Sligo were beaten at half time according to the papers, and that Jimmy Murray was rampant. He was centre forward, and that Tom Dunleavy was the centre back, and he found it very difficult. So Roscommon were superior in every department. Phelan Murray got the freeze. So there was more than any other part of the team, the paper said, the key to the Roscommon success was the defence. Roscommon's defence, where Boyd, Casserly, Jackson, Lynch, Carless and Collins formed a double phalanx of powerfully built men, sure and deadly in breaking up raids. And there was never more in evidence than on Sunday last. Now, I looked up the word phalanx, and phalanx is like, do you know when you see the police in formation, Aidan, like in a riot squad, do you know, there's a row ahead.
Oh, yeah.
That's a phalanx. Yeah. They're in rows. So he says there were a double phalanx of defenders. Like, it's like a row of troops, a row of police officers. And it comes from the Greek word for phalanx, for formation. So that's what the newspapers call it, just the language they were using, that Roscommon were so strong that they were, he referred to them in that phraseology, you know. So, so the second half of the game, Aidan, Roscommon pulled away after half time, and they said that Mick Culhan was a wizard at midfield play, and he set up movements, opening up movements and leading forays into the Sligo goal area. And not alone did he command play in this vital sector, but he invariably went off on total hand solo runs to place the forwards who had taken up good advantageous positions to receive his hand passes. So, like, Mick Culhan was the man of the match. Like, he played very, very well in the middle of the field. As I said, they called him a wizard at midfield. Now, the Irish Independent said the Sligo were unlucky. Sligo were lucky that the margin wasn't greater. And the Irish Press said it was a Roscommon cakewalk to easy victory. So the second half of the game, Aidan, Jimmy Murray, Phelan Murray, Donald Keenan were to the fore. Just after half time, the breaking ball at midfield, Roscommon were winning it all. The rain got very heavy in the second half, and the wind as well. So in the second half, Roscommon got another goal. Jack McQuillan got it again. So he got 2 goals. Jimmy Murray got 2 points. Donald Keenan got a point as well. And in the last 10 minutes, Sligo scored 5 points in a row in the last 10 minutes to make it, put some respectability on it. But by all accounts, Roscommon were the superior team, apart from the last 10 minutes. So The paper said as well that Roscommon were superior in every department. They outclassed Sligo. They were faster. They were cleverer in general play with great understanding. They were lightning speed. And McQuillan's goal after a few minutes in the second half made them unbeatable. Culhane and Boland at midfield were the foundation stone of the victory. And Jimmy Murray, of course, as well. So Roscommon, dominant. John Ginnerney, in fact, it was John Ginnerney who got the second goal. I apologise. John Ginnerney got the goal in the second half, Aidan. But 14,000 yeah. people were at the game. The paper talks about Connacht Council having a meeting after the game to, you know, to congratulate Ballina for hosting it. And Ballina spent £1,000 at the time, an awful lot of money. They spent an awful lot of time and money to fix up their stadium for the first ever Connacht final in Ballina.
And has there ever been any Connacht matches in Ballina since then, I wonder?
I'd have to check it, Aidan. I don't know, but it's interesting. Yeah, but Mayo down the years, like Charlestown used to host a lot of matches. I remember being at league matches in Charlestown. You know, Charlestown's a fine stadium as well. But it seems like they might play an odd league match in Ballina, but Castlebar, I'd say, is the main one now at the moment. I'll give you Mick Culhane, Aidan. He's an interesting character. He played midfield for Roscommon. He got man of the match. Mick Culhane was born in Glynn in County Limerick. He was a Limerick man. And he was born in the early 1920s. He joined the Guards in 1946. And he played for Dublin in 1946. He's with the Geraldines Club in Dublin. And he played inter-county football with Dublin in 1946.
That's an interesting one, isn't it?
And then in the 46, he was transferred from the Guards down to Roscommon. And it must have been to Castlereagh because he joined the Tarraman Club in Castlereagh. Now, Tarraman's just outside Castlereagh, as you know. And Dan O'Rourke, the famous president of the GAA, was from the Tarraman Club. So Tarraman was a famous club in Roscommon back in the years gone by. You know, but back, say, 50 years ago, like the football and club landscape was totally different nearly in Roscommon. You know, you had teams like Tarraman. You had teams like St. Barry's Rooski, which is now St. Barry's and Kilglass Gaels. You had Aerog, or Michael Glavies was just the one club at that time. Tarraman was there. Kiltoom was a club before Bridget's, I think they were called Kiltoom. You know, so there was different. St. Patrick's was the team in Arcrockery before St. Dominic's. So there was different teams back in the 40s and 50s. And of course, I think in Roscommon as well, you had a club called St. Coleman's, Aidan, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. St. Coleman's.
So the football and landscape in Roscommon, if you're looking at it 50, 60, 70 years ago, was a different landscape. And then you had amalgamations and you had breakups. Like Killina was a team in Tulsk of their own right, and a very good team as well, you know. So
goes to show you how things have changed over the years. But yeah. I was just thinking there as well, Ray, imagine if the All-Stars were out back then. It would have been awful hard to pick an all-star team when you consider not just in Roscommon. Well, Roscommon, you know, 1943-44 and that year, you know, that year as well, but also around the country as well. All the really excellent players around the country. It would have been very tough to pick an all-star team that year.
It would indeed, but I'd say Aidan in the 40s, I'd say Roscommon, 43-44, 46-47, I'd say Roscommon are probably a 7 or 8 at least every year, you know, those years, you know. Yeah. You know, the Bill Jacksons, Bill Carless, Liam Gilmartin, Eamon Boland, you know, Mick Culhane would have gone all-star in 47, Jimmy Murray, Phelan Murray, you know, Jack McQuillan, all those fellas would have got Onesie Hoare. They'd all be getting all-stars, I'd say. Like, they're all famous players, like, in heroes. And just another thing, Aidan, I was looking at last night, like, Roscommon, like, in the 40s, that's when Roscommon football became, you know, the great county team with the tradition we have. Like, Roscommon had won a couple of Connacht finals. They won the first one in 1903, Aidan. And then Roscommon won a Connacht final in 1913. And between 1913 and 14, Roscommon didn't win a Connacht final for 29 years. Not until 1943. So it was a Galway Mayo monopoly or duopoly. And Sligo Leitrim won one Connacht final in 1927 and Sligo won one in 1928. And Roscommon weren't even getting the Connacht finals then, you know. They were in maybe one or two in that 29-year period. And then they got to the Connacht final in 41 and 42 and Mayo or Galway beat them. And Galway, I think, were beaten in the All-Ireland final in 1942 by Dublin. So Roscommon started to come back in. They got to the Connacht final in 41 and 42, beaten by Galway. And then they won 43 and 44, 46 and 47. And like they were the best team in the country.
Like that was a golden period for them as well.
Golden period. Like we were beating an All Ireland final after a replay in 46. Kerry got two goals in the last couple of minutes to get a draw in 46. Roscommon were home and dry, and then Kerry got the two goals. You know, so we could have got three All Irelands. And in 47, who knows? We were favourites to beat Cavan in the semi final, and Cavan beat Roscommon 2-4 to 6 points. They got two goals. You know, in Croke Park on the 3rd of August 1947. But Mick Culhane was from Glynn in County Limerick. He joined the Guards, went to Dublin, joined the Geraldines Club, played for Dublin in 1946 Championship. Then in late 46, he was transferred to Roscommon, possibly to Castlereagh, joined the Tarmon Club, signed up to Roscommon in 47, was midfield along with Eamon Boland, tremendous player. The paper called him a wizard at midfield. Played for Roscommon until 1950, Aidan, right?
Yeah.
And in 1950, there was a celebration to Hugh Gibbons. I forgot to mention Hugh Gibbons. He was on the 43 and 44 team. He wasn't on the 47 team there. But Mick Culhane left in 1950. And he left the Guards, Aidan. Would you believe that? He left the Guards and he went to America. And he went to Pittsburgh. And he trained to become a dentist. And he became a dentist in Pittsburgh. And there's lots of information online about him being the vice chairman of the North American GA Board, which was set up in 1959. He was the vice chairman.
Total change of career, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, yeah. So he became a dentist, lived in Pittsburgh, very much involved in the North American GA Board, or the US GA Board, and particularly the Midwest Board. And he won Midwest Championships. He joined a club in Pittsburgh called Roger Casements. And he played with Roger Casements for many, many years. And then he came back to Ireland, Aidan, in the 80s as a dentist. And he retrained in Ireland to get the qualifications as a dentist in Ireland. And in 1989, he was awarded a Doctor of Dental Surgery in Ireland to go with his Doctor of Dental Surgery from Pittsburgh University in America. And he went back and he lived in Glynn in County Limerick. I probably worked as a dentist, I'm not certain on that, but he certainly qualified in Ireland as a dentist in 1989. He probably would have been in his 60s. And he,
highly educated man, so.
Yeah, and he died on the 6th of December in the year 2000 in his home house in Glynn in County Limerick. So that's the famous Mick Culhane. I'd say Mick Culhane would have been up in 80 when he died in, I suppose, you know.
That's a good age.
Yeah, I'd say he'd been up in 80. But like, we think about all the great footballers Roscommon had down through the years, like, and we forget that sometimes we have sort of guests to the county that come in and tug out and play for us and perform very well, like Bernie Kine. Was a great footballer, came in from Galway, and he was a teacher, and he played for St. Foyles, and he played midfield for Roscommon in the 1962 All-Ireland final against Kerry. Bernie Kine, himself and John Stafford Kelly from Elphin, they were a great midfield partnership. So Bernie Kine came from Galway, was a great footballer, did a lot of coaching. I remember when we were playing schoolboys, he was doing a lot of refereeing of matches, you know. I can't remember rightly, I think it was Ballyleague school he taught in. But Bernie Kine, big tall man, his son Nolly played for the Mells in Longford. But he was a great footballer for Roscommon, Bernie Kine, and he played in that 1962 All-Ireland. He came from Galway, and Mick Culhane came from Limerick, of all places. He came from Glynn in County Limerick, and he starred for Roscommon, Aidan, in the 1947 Connacht final in Ballina, when Roscommon beat Mayo 2-12 to 1-8. And he went to America, became a dentist, lived all his life in America, came back in the 80s, trained as a dentist in Ireland, or got the qualifications to become a dentist in Ireland, and then he died on the 6th of December in the year 2000, the famous Mick Culhane. So a nice, various, a little interesting aspect. And along with Bernie Kine, he was one of two that I know of that came from outside the county to play for Roscommon. It'd be nice to find out if we've any more players that were sort of came, you know, to play for Roscommon. Back in those days, Aidan, a lot of players were Gardaí, you know, and they often played in the county that they were stationed in. You know, there was, you know, the like, for example, in 1957, Aidan, Louth won the All-Ireland final. And they're two midfielders. I think it was Seamus O'Donnell and Kevin O'Neill for Louth were from Mayo. They were from Mayo. Would you believe that? The last two Mayo men to win All-Ireland senior medals were Seamus O'Donnell and Kevin O'Neill from Mayo, played midfield for Louth in the 1957 All-Ireland final, and they beat Cork. And that was a shock. Do you remember talking about shocks last week? Louth beating Cork was a shock. Everybody expected Louth to win that game, but Louth won it. And those boys were in midfield, the two Mayo boys. So, like, they were like Larry Tompkins and Shea Fahey. And yeah. There was a man from Leitrim, Hubert Reynolds. Hubert Reynolds is from Gort Letcher in County Leitrim. His nephew would be Seamus Tighe. Seamus Tighe got man of the match nearly in the 1978 under-21 All-Ireland final for Roscommon. He's a neighbour of mine. So Seamus was left full-back. He's Kerry. But Hubert Reynolds is from Gort Letcher in County Leitrim. He was a guard stationed in Louth. And he played midfield for Louth in the All-Ireland final in 1950. And Mayo beat them in 1950. But Hubert Reynolds was midfield in that team for Louder. He was playing on that team anyway for Louder. So it just goes to show with the guard, if you're the guardie that or a teacher, you played where you were living. And the Cavan team, Aidan, do you know the Cavan team that beat Roscommon in 47 in the semi-final?
Yeah.
Like all the great players, like they're recorded in song, like, you know, Simon Degnan, PJ Duke, Mick Higgins, Tony Tighe, the Gunnar Brady, all those famous Cavan players, just like Roscommon, Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray, Jack McQuillan, in the 40s for Roscommon. They're famous Cavan team. Peter Dunne, who scored a goal against Roscommon in 47 semi-final, and Tony Tighe got the other goal. They're famous players. Like Peter Dunne, who got, they called him Babe Ruth in America in the 47 final, the Polo Grounds, the American press, because he was like Babe Ruth. He scored all the frees. He was just a brilliant free taker. They called him the Babe Ruth of Gaelic football, the American press, Peter Dunne. But the player I was getting to on the Cavan team in 1947, the beat Roscommon, Columba McDyer. Columba McDyer was on the Cavan team in 1947, and he was from Glenties in County Donegal, right? I think he was a teacher. He lived in Cavan, and he was the first Donegal man to win an All-Ireland, and he won them with Cavan in 47. And Cavan won the All-Ireland again in 48. They beat Mayo in the final. So Cavan won two in a row that time, and they won again in 52. So Cavan had a very, very strong tradition of football, but Columba McDyer was a Donegal man playing for Cavan in 47. He was from the same town as Jimmy McGuinness, and I think Jimmy McGuinness has a whistle, a famous whistle. I think it's mentioned in different literature that he used for the Donegal training, that when Columba McDyer returned to Glenties, he might have trained Jimmy McGuinness, but he had a whistle, Columba McDyer had, that he gave to Jimmy McGuinness, and Jimmy McGuinness always used that whistle for his training. I think he lost it on one occasion, that he was heartbroken because was Columba McDyer's whistle, and eventually got it back. He found it or whatever. But little interesting side story there on players from outside of the counties playing for Roscommon, like, you know, and for other counties. We might look into that a little more, Aidan, about, you know, players that came in to play for Roscommon in the same way as Mick Culhane did in 47 and in 40.
Isn't it interesting though? Like you know, like the way. You know, Cavan over the years, like it was back in that period where they were, you know, Cavan did so well, kind of, you know, in Ulster and of course at All Ireland level, and more kind of recently with the potential when you consider that the players that Cavan have had over the last 15 or 20 years, they've never actually pushed on and actually been serious contenders at All Ireland level.
They haven't, Aidan. No, they haven't even been serious contenders in Ulster. You know, they've only been in a couple of Ulster finals. They won in 97.
And they have some wonderful players like that. You know, over the last 20 years, they've had some serious players.
Brilliant. Like, you know, Jason Riley, Larry Riley, Peter Riley, Dermot McCabe, you know, Cian Mackey, you know, Garage McKiernan. They've had some great players, you know, and they haven't, whatever is wrong with the team, maybe belief-wise, but I suppose if you look at Ulster, like Donegal, Armagh, Derry, Tyrone, Down, all those teams have sort of, in the last, say, 40 years, have just passed out Cavan, you know, and like Cavan have even become, you know, if you look at it, Monaghan are way ahead of Cavan now as well, you know.
I think the only team really that haven't done anything serious in the last couple of years, although they've had the potential, is Antrim.
Absolutely, like they've a big population, and would you believe, like Antrim were in the All Ireland semi final in 1946. Roscommon played Kerry in the final, but Antrim had won the Ulster final in 46, and Cavan beat them in the Ulster final in 47. And Antrim, I don't think, have won an Ulster championship since 1951. So like with the population, like, and the thing is, Ulster teams like in Belfast and Antrim, they've won All Ireland club titles, like St John's and St Gall's. You know, they've a lot of good club teams. But
do you know another sad thing? I don't know if you've seen recent recent pictures of it, but you know Casement Park in, yeah, in Belfast, to see it have gone down because it was a fine stadium. I remember seeing hurling matches and Gaelic matches played on it, and it used to be a fine place to play a game. And now it's just overgrown. And of course they have proposals that they're going to kind of do it up again into a stadium again. Wouldn't that be lovely to kind of bring it back to fruition again?
Oh, it would, Aidan. And Casement Park is, like, it's the home of Antrim. And I remember, like yourself, being up at matches in Roscommon, played Antrim in 97 and in 98 in the league, and 99 rather, in the league, and I was up at all them games. The Roscommon won all those matches. And but Antrim, for the population size of the county, it's a shame that they haven't been stronger in Ulster, like you'd think they would be. But Casement Park, there was sort of controversy, like the money is supposed to be there for it, to do that stadium up. But I think there was something up with the planning, or there was objections to it and whatnot. So then again, Northern Ireland government were off for 2 or 3 years as well. Everything got lost. So I think it's coming back. I think they're going to build it. But it needs to be done. Like Ulster, Casement Park, such a great stadium. And, it would be a shame to see it, you know, left idle, left in a state of dereliction. Perpetually, you know, it's like we couldn't imagine Hyde Park being left derelict. You know, it's a shame to see your county stadium left like that. But I think it was internal wrangling, really. There was problems with the planning permission, there was objections, and then storm and government collapsed. But they're back up and running now, and hopefully all sides will get together and get it done. Like, you know, so.
I suppose the Roscommon equivalent of that would be, you know, what most people would know nowadays as the Loch Pitch, but back then would have been the St. Colman's Park.
That's right.
You know, that would be the equivalent in Roscommon of that, because I'm sure down the years back in Jimmy Murray's time, that would have been the field of dreams for many a supporter and many a great player. And as we often said off air now, we used to be, when I was training with the Gaels, playing with the Gaels in my younger days, you know, it would have been it was a lovely, we even had friendly matches on it, but certainly it was always a lovely pitch to train on. And like, I'm sure now, I'd never actually seen any pictures and that would be an interesting thing. I must actually look into it, look up images or something on Google or something, and see if there is actually images can be got of St. Colman's pitch when it was back in the day. Wouldn't that be an interesting thing to find out?
It would, Aidan. I'm sure there will be, and maybe myself and yourself could do a bit of research on it and see what we can find. You know, but I'm sure it would be. And like, Colman's Park was venue to so many fine kind of finals over the years, you know, particularly in the 50s. Leitrim played Galway there, I think, in 58. It was supposed to be a great game. Leitrim came very close to beating Galway. I think they lost by 2 points, but it was in Comas Park. And Paddy McGarrity of Leitrim was supposed to have ran Galway ragged that day, and it's a shame they didn't win it. Like, in from 57 to 60, Leitrim were probably the second best team in Connacht. They were in the Connacht final for those 4 years in a row, and Galway beat them probably relatively easily in 57, 59 and 60. But in 58, Leitrim had them on the rack for most of the game, and Galway just scraped through with a 2 point victory. And then Dublin only beat Galway by a point or two in the All-Ireland semi-final in 58, and Dublin won the All-Ireland. They beat Derry by 3 or 4 points. And would you believe it, in 1958, Derry sort of came out of nowhere. And they won the Ulster final, and they beat Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. It was like the shock of the century at the time, because Derry had never won an Ulster championship until 1958. And they got to Croke Park, All-Ireland semi-final, and they beat Kerry. Can you imagine that? It's like, let me see. It'd be like Antrim winning the Ulster final next year and beating Kerry in the All-Ireland semi-final. It'd be just a similar sort of a shock. You know, it was unbelievable. There was a great player called Sean O'Connell. He played for Derry for a long number of years. He played in 58 and he also played right into the 70s, 75 and 76 when Derry won the Ulster final. But it'd be nice to find out about the Cormac Park, get some photographs. And,
maybe if there's listeners out there that, would have any pictures that could email, Ross Sport on rossfm@aol.com. But we'll also do our own research, as you said, Ray, because that is something special. Like, my grandfather would have been, Lord of Mercy, and my mum's dad now would have been, he would have been around in those days as well. And I'm sure many a match he would have went to there as well. So I'm sure, like, even some listeners that are listening to this now would have, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that would have fond memories. And indeed, look, there's been many fond memories and some bad memories, I suppose, in Dr. Hyde Park as well, between minor and under 21 and seniors and different things. It's nice to compare the two things, because not that much would be known by our generation about what it would have been like back in those days. So it would be just another interesting thing to find out.
It would, Aidan, and Comans Park surface is probably the nicest surface in Ireland during the summer. It's just a pity Comans Park wouldn't have been a great place for developing into a stadium in terms of a Hyde Park, Aidan. Like, Hyde Park's an incredible stadium. You wouldn't have had the space down in Comans Park to develop, or the land wouldn't allow you either with the flooding. You know, it wouldn't have been, it was a good decision by the people in Roscommon, who the powers that be, to go and build that. But I think Hyde Park is a fantastic stadium. It's just a brilliant stadium. Yeah. There's great parking around it. There's good access routes in and out of it. You know, there's so many. Well, Roscommon's an ideal town for matches, Aidan, because there's roads going everywhere out of it. You know what I mean? You can go out to Strokestown, you go to Athlone, you can go to Galway, you can go to Castlereagh Road. You know, there's so many outlets, arteries out of it. You know, it's a great, you can park anywhere. And then, you know, it's been a great stadium. Like, you talked there about the good days in Hyde Park, and, you know, 2001 was a great day, 1990, 91, winning all those kind of finals, 1978 winning All Ireland under 21, brilliant day. But you talk about the disappointments. I heard in 1971, one of the first years Hyde Park was open, Sligo came up and beat Roscommon in the first round of the championship in Hyde Park. You know, disappointing.
What year actually did the Hyde? What year actually was the first match at the Hyde?
I think it was 71, Aidan. But again, it'd be something if any of the listeners knows to email us and let us know. But I think it was 71. But my father says it was 71. Sligo, back by Mickey Cairns and those great Barnes, Murphy, they come up and beat Roscommon by a few points in the first round of the championship. But yeah. I was just looking there, Aidan. I was talking about Cavan and Ulster championships. Ulster, Cavan has 39 Ulster championships. Next is Monaghan and Tyrone with 16 each. Armagh have 14, Down have 12, Donegal have 10, Antrim have 9, Derry have 7, and Fermanagh have none. Now, Fermanagh have lost six finals. But Cavan, Aidan, look at this for a statistic. Between 1931 and 1955, I know I mentioned it a minute ago, between 1931 and 55, that's 26 Ulster finals, right? Cavan won 20 out of that 26. Wasn't that something?
Wow.
We talk about the Dubs today winning 10 in a row in Leinster, or 10 out of 15, or sorry, 14 out of 15. Like, Cavan had won 20 out of 25 from 1931 to 55. Like, that's
excellent, isn't
that's
it?
That's unreal. Like, so, like, the pedigree in Cavan, like, the tradition that they have, like, they're 23 Ulster championships ahead of Monaghan in the pecking order. So, like, that, they're going to be ahead in the charts in Ulster for a long, long time to come, you know. It's amazing. And Aidan, like, Cavan, you think about Cavan, it's a similar type of county to Ireland, a rural-based county, hard-working people. People move away to college and work in Dublin especially. And like Roscommon, it has a rich tradition in Gaelic football and supporters who are absolutely fanatical about the game and passionate, which is, it's beautiful to see. You know, it's lovely to see it. You know, that Roscommon is such a passionate county for Gaelic football, and Cavan's the same, and it's brilliant to see it, you know. But I'd love to see Cavan back up at the top table, Roscommon, you know, Antrim, teams like that, because I think, you know, the game needs variety, and you see the same teams now every year, Dublin, Kerry, you know, the Tyrones, these teams, Donegal even, like, you know, people get fed up with them, and the GAA, I think, in the Gaelic football side of things, they need a new team coming forward every so often, and we're not getting that in the recent years.
I mean, we've seen that, I suppose, from a league point of view, we've seen that resurgence of Longford and Longford and Leitrim doing well in the league. But for some reason, it doesn't transfer when it comes to championship. It's just that for some reason the league form doesn't transfer into the championship, which is sad as well. Because it would make the provincial championships a bit more competitive. Like, I mean, in Leinster, with Longford, of course, the last number of years it's been all Dublin. And, you know, I suppose in Connacht then for the last couple of years it's been between ourselves and between Roscommon and Galway, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would be, you know, like if the likes of, you know, Longford and Leinster and Roscommon and, you know, Leitrim in Connacht kind of brought that extra edge to both provincial championships, wouldn't it be a wonderful thing?
Here's a thought for you, Aidan. How about Leitrim and Longford amalgamating and playing in the Connacht Championship? Let them play in the Connacht Championship.
That's it. You know, they'd have seen it. Because, I mean, you know, back at even a couple of years ago, you remember Paul Barden and,
yeah,
you know, they had some serious players. And then when you throw into the mix all the excellent players now from around Longford and different counties that would have went to St. Mel's, like you went there yourself. You know, so, and that's kind of one of the big colleges known for producing top class players. Wouldn't it be, you know, that the resources are there, like the same as like we're in Galway, you know, St. Gerlach's, as you know, and Roscommon CBS, you know, all these colleges have produced some serious footballers that went on and played county level. So wouldn't that be wonderful to see that happening as well?
Well, I think so, Aidan. I think the way the GA, it's look, in the GA terms at the moment, it's like the rich are getting richer, you know, the disparity between the top teams and the bottom teams. It's like the Premier League in England now, the Norwiches against the Liverpools and these teams, it's like, it's not a competition really. You know, in terms of the resources, the fan base, the money involved, and like the English Premier League will be, unless something seismic happens, it'll be Liverpool, United, City, Spurs, Chelsea and Arsenal for years and years to come, you know, unless something radical happens. And in the GAA, Dublin and Kerry and a couple of more teams will always be there at the top. But the Leitrims and Longfords, really, let's face it, they're not going to figure. And I think maybe it'd be nice if the GAA, if start to reimagine things that could help give their fans or give the players themselves a chance to get
the
top
players,
table.
When you look at the players they have the talent. Mm. It's just that something is missing that, you know, would help them get into that bracket, you know,
I think Aidan, Leitrim and Longford is such a small population base in both counties. Like Leitrim has about 20,000, Longford might have 40, you know.
Yeah.
Like we have only 60 and like we're punching above our weight, Aidan. Like we're being competitive with the top teams all the time, you know, Roscommon, and punching above our weight. And Roscommon players management deserve great credit because do you remember a few weeks ago we said no team since 1982 has won an All-Ireland with a population of less than 100,000.
Yeah,
and it's gone to the stage now where no team has been in a final with a population of less than 100,000. Like, Mayo have a population of 150 or 160. It's nearly three times Roscommon. Similarly in Galway, Donegal, you know, they all have big, big populations. And we have 63 or 64,000. If we had doubled that population, given the fan base and the enthusiasm we have for football, we would be thereabouts in, you know, regularly. Like we'd be, like Kerry have over 150, 160,000 people, rural county, with fanatical for football. And, you know, it's every generation that a great crop of players come through in Roscommon. You know, we could be lucky to have 15 top players come through, but give the players great credit. At the end of the day, it's 15 against 15 and they punch above their weight nearly all the time and they give great enjoyment to the Roscommon fans and we're very proud of them, particularly last year. What they achieved last year was a credit to themselves, the management, the way they beat Mayo, they beat Galway, beat Cork in the Super H, which was a great victory down in Cork, were competitive against Tyrone and competitive against Dublin. So like they deserve great credit. But I think, Aidan, for the GAA to grow as a competition for everybody, I think we have to look at reimagining the situation and maybe say to Leitrim and Longford, look at lads, here's your record over the last 40 years. It doesn't bear for happy reading.
Yeah.
Give them the option to amalgamate every year, or every year, to play maybe 1 year, maybe 3 years in the Leinster Championship and 3 years then in the Connacht Championship. Let them decide. But I think Leitrim and Longford should have the choice to amalgamate and play in the Connacht Championship. And I think, Aidan, myself, that if Longford and Leitrim were joined up, I think they could be winning the Connacht Championship. I really believe.
Yeah, because between the two of them, between the two counties, I mean, they do have quality players.
Yeah.
Like I know, look, Paul Barden has retired, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I think he has retired from Intercounty.
Yes.
So wouldn't that have been wonderful a couple of years ago now for him to have, even back, you know, even having a medal, like a league medal or, you know, a championship level, you know, in the Leinster Championship, and even, you know, the likes of obviously Declan Darcy that played for, He captained Leitrim to, you know, in the early 90s as well. So, you know, but not too many Leitrim people not too many Longford or Leitrim players have medals. Of course, they're hard won as well. But, you know, wouldn't it be great to see, as you said there, an amalgamation of them, because they do have some excellent players. I mean, that can be borne. Or when you see their both teams' league performances, you know, they've won promotion in the last two or three years, both teams and that. So, you know, it'd be just nice to see them getting rewarded.
Well, I think, Aidan, I think if Leitrim and Longford, because Longford and Leitrim are very, you know, they're very closely associated with each other. You know, I know they're in different provinces, but they're the same diocese, you know, Ard and Clonmacnoise, and the bonds between Leitrim and Longford would be very strong. You know, they're very close together. And, I think that myself personally, just take that example. I would love to see Leitrim and Longford amalgamated for the county championship, and I'd like to see them playing in the Connacht Championship. And at the same time, I wouldn't like to see them playing the Connacht Championship because I think they'd be very good. I think they would beat Roscommon and beat Mayo. They could beat Galway. I think they'd be a very dangerous team, Aidan. You know, I think. But you mentioned Paul Barden there. Like in the 90s and early 2000s, Paul Barden, we talked a few weeks ago about the unfairness of the All-Star system. Like, we got no All-Star last year, which was a joke. You know, it's a question now of nobody knows who the All-Stars are going to be until the All-Ireland final is over, and they'll pick the best 12 or 13 players off the All-Ireland final and maybe one or two.
And really, to be considered for an All-Star, you'd have to get into the All-Ireland semi-final slash final, really.
It makes a joke of the whole system, Aidan, because the league should be taken into consideration. Because and as well as that, the All-Stars should be should be relative, you know, it should be weighted. If you're playing outstandingly well for Leitrim and you play three championship matches and you're brilliant in the three championship matches and you're brilliant in the league, you know, you should be in line for an All-Star, because in your tournament and against the opposition that you were against, you were brilliant. This thing of the All-Star system, for me, Aidan, sums up everything that's wrong. It's a microcosm of everything that's wrong about the GAA as we have it at the moment in the county system. It favours the big boys. It neglects and discriminates against the small boys. And it's the big shots every year. Whoever's in the final, the winners will have six or seven, and the runners-up will have four or five. And then they'll have a tokenism from maybe somebody who plays well in the Super 8s or the Ulster Champions or whatever. And then the likes of Roscommon winning the Connacht final, beating Mayo, beating Galway, away from home, and not even one person. I think it beggars belief. Connor Cox, for example, well entitled to an All-Star. Niall Daly, well entitled to an All-Star. Top players, really, really good. Neglected. But it sums up the way the GAA has gone, and what's wrong about the GAA can be, you look at the All-Star system, and everything that's wrong about the GAA is there in the All-Star system. Whoever's in All-Star, the big boys.
It's a elite system anyway.
It is, yeah, but the GAA is elitist in itself, because for a start, Aidan, it's a totally unfair system, because you look at the way the clubs or the county teams are, the competitions are configured. It's configured on a county basis. And like, if you've got a team with a million and a half to pick from and a team with 25,000 to pick from in the same competition, like it's a totally unequal system. It's a totally, you know, it's all geared towards the big teams, the big money, the big populations, to be successful year in, year out. And that's why I think we need to reimagine the GAA from here on in. Like, give Leitrim and Longford the opportunity to amalgamate, to play in the Connacht Championship, And at least then, if they won the Connacht Championship, it gives them boys a chance to play in the Super 8s and to test themselves against the Dublins, the Kerrys, and just mix it up. Because let's face it, the statistics don't lie. Leitrim have won two Connacht Championships since 1927. They've only been in a handful of finals. Sligo similarly. Longford have won one Leinster Championship in 1968. They were in the final in 65. And after that, they were never in a final since that. So,
what they could do is what they do with the hurling. You know, the way there's like an A All Star team, like the main winners are like Galway's and Kilkenny's and Waterford's and Limerick's and all that. But then they also like have, I don't know what you put it, like a B All Star team. You know, for the likes of Roscommon, Kildare, and all that. Maybe if they did that in Roscommon, then. You know, the people from, the players from the likes of Leitrim, Sligo, and all those Longfords and all that, Louds and all that, they have a chance of winning an All-Star. But it would be the same as winning an overall, getting onto the actual, in the hurling, where it's Kilkenny's and all that. Maybe some of them wouldn't make that type, but it wouldn't be the same as that. Sure, it wouldn't.
No, but Aidan, if you look at the take the Oscar nominations for example, you could have a low budget film from say made in Latvia as a best foreign film in the Oscars, and if you've got a great international film, low budget, and the acting is amazing in it, or even an American film or British film, low budget but a great story, great acting, and they're in line for an Oscar Best Actor award. With the guys who's in the big blockbuster movies, because they perform well in that film, which is low budget, and there might be new actors, but it could be an amazing film. They're not discriminated against because they're not in a film where there's Steven Spielberg with maybe $200 million or $300 million budget, with big special effects and action moves and all that sort of stuff. And I think what the Oscars do is they treat the quality of the acting in the context of the film and that person is in, and they look at how good that person was. And I think the Leitrims and the Longfords, if they're in Division 3 of the league and they play very well within that league structure, and then they play well in the Championship, even if they're up against Antrim, Roscommon, and maybe somebody else in the qualifiers, they should be in line for an All-Star if they are up to high level of performance in regard to their standard and regard to the standard.
Regardless of what county.
Exactly, Aidan. So like this idea of rewarding the Dublins and the Kerrys and these guys, do you think a Dublin guy getting a seventh All-Star is going to be, celebrating that in the same way a guy from Leitrim would celebrate an All-Star, or Wicklow, or Fermanagh? If any of those counties won an All-Star, it would be treated like an All-Ireland. You know, it would be such an amazing award for their county. And I think everything that's wrong about the GAA, in my opinion, can be summed up by looking at the All-Star system and the awards in the All-Star system. It's a totally discriminatory award system. Favours the big boys who are already getting the benefits of playing all the big matches, getting all the benefits that go with that, and then they're getting these All-Stars along with their All-Ireland medals that they might have, what's getting your sixth or seventh All-Star going to mean? I think they should be awarding All-Stars to people who are playing very well within their own within their own, category. And at the moment in GAA, in county system, we have heavyweight boxers fighting against flyweights and bantamweights. And it's the heavyweights are getting, not alone are the heavyweights fighting against the bantamweights, but the heavyweights are getting the awards and the All-Stars for doing that. Like, of course, why wouldn't they get the All-Star? Because they're heavyweights. But the smaller teams that are with players that's playing well, and for a long time we were in that category. We've come out of that in recent times. We've been very, very good in Connacht. We should have won. We've won two. We could have won four Connacht finals. Yeah. We're up now, and our star is rising. Like, we're up in the Super 8s category, but we were in 2010, for example, relegated to Division 4. Aidan, down that time we were up against Antrim and Wicklow and Wexford in Division 4. Like, we were hitting rock bottom. It wasn't that long ago. So I just think, for me, start with the All-Star system. Start and review that. Let's start recognising the talent and the performances of players on lesser teams. Give them a bit of credit. Give them a bit of acknowledgement. Paul Bard is a perfect example. I'm not far from Paul Bard and I live in Rooski. He was from Newton Forbes, just in the road. I used to go to Longford matches regularly, Aidan, in the Championship in the early 2000s and late 90s. Paul Bard was a Rolls Royce footballer. He was a tremendous player and he was certainly entitled to All-Stars. Like, for example, they might have beaten Westmead in the first round or Loud or Wexford and he would have been out of this world in that game and he wouldn't even be a mention sometimes for an All-Star award. So I think they need to review the All-Stars and I wouldn't agree with a B All-Star award. I think an All-Star award should be given to the player.
On merit.
Yeah, merit, yeah. Within the category or within the, if you like, the confines of the tournament and the competition that player had in the year.
Because, I mean, as well as that, like, I mean, when you look at it, a fair play to anyone that does win an All-Star. Like, they're not easily won. But it does seem to be, like, it's only teams that get to the last four that are considered for All-Stars, whereas I think if it was fair, like you just said there, if league matches and championship matches were taken into consideration, it would make it a lot fairer, you know, because, I mean, that the players would be reviewed in more matches, which would give them more of a chance of getting into the All-Star team, you know, so that would be a great thing, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, because if you could play your first match of the season in the All-Ireland final and get, you know, score maybe a goal and 5 or 6 points, you're going to get an All-Star for one match, you know.
Yeah.
Like, this is the All-Star team from 2019. Cluxton in goals, Stephen Cluxton, Michael Fitzsimons, Ronan McNamee, Tom O'Sullivan, Paddy Durkin, Brian Howard, Jack McCaffrey, Brian Fenton, David Moran, Paul Mannion, Sean O'Shea, Michael Murphy, David Clifford, and Colin McShane. So you have two from Tyrone, you have six or seven from Dublin, four from Kerry, and one from Mayo. You know, there's the big guns, Eden. You know what I mean? They're all the top teams. Mayo, Dublin, Kerry and Tyrone last year. You know, the four semi-finalists. Mayo played Dublin. And then Kerry won the semi-final as well. And it just goes to show you that, like, Jack McCaffrey, you know, all those guys have won some of them have won multiple All-Irelands. So Sean O'Shea, where's the Carlos there? The Carlos a couple of years ago had a great run, you know, the beat Kildare and the great run. Like, some of those guys should have been entitled. Like, there was a guy called Sean O'Brien. Was it Sean O'Brien playing for Carlo? It was O'Brien anyway. I think it was Sean O'Brien. I don't know if it was Sean O'Brien, the rugby player. But, like, he was phenomenal. You know, he wouldn't have been in the running for an All-Star, but why not? Why shouldn't he be? He should be in the running for an All-Star. So here we have the All-Star Awards going to the top star players from the top teams. You know, like, for example, if that was the Premier League this year, it'd be the All-Stars would pick from Liverpool and City. And, like, you could have, take, for example, Nick Pope plays in goals for Burnley. He wouldn't get a look in. He's got probably the best record of a goalkeeper in England in terms of clean sheets. Burnley are probably sixth or seventh from bottom, or seventh from bottom. But, like, in the Irish All-Star system, he wouldn't get a look in. You know, it'd be the top teams. So, like, it's, in my opinion, all those guys I mentioned there, brilliant footballers. Of course they deserve All-Stars. They were tremendous. But, look at the teams they're playing with. Look at the resources behind them. Look at the chances they have to be at the top table all the time. But, like, the player for the lesser county who plays tremendously well year in, year out is getting totally overlooked, and I think that's wrong. And I think they shouldn't be a B All-Stars, even though, because that's like the consolation prize, isn't it? It's like the Oscars. You could have a low budget film in a foreign country, but a great actor and a great movie with a low budget, and it could be
same as getting an overall All-Star, like you get a B All-Star.
I don't think it should. So that's where it's at, you know. So so Aidan, look at it. We move on to the 2010 final.
Yeah, I suppose really before we do that, have you got the starting teams for Roscommon and Sligo for the 47 final?
Well, I've got the Roscommon team. A few of the Sligo players, Tom Dunleavy, Brendan Wickham was the goalkeeper. Brendan Wickham, I think, had a tremendous game. You know, he made three saves in the first half if he didn't do that, it would have been a total whitewash. Like, he was fantastic. Brendan Wickham and Tom Dunleavy was centre back, and there's a guy called Frank White played in the centre-half forward position for Sligo. He scored a goal from the penalty to make it a goal apiece. So, but the Roscommon team, G. Dolan, D. Boyd, J. Catherley, B. Jackson, B. Lynch, Bill Carless, T. Collins, M. Culhane, Mick Culhan, Eamon Boland, Phelan Murray, Jimmy Murray, Donald Keenan, J.J. Fallon, Jack McQuillan and J.J. Nerney, John Nerney. And the goals, Roscommon goals were scored by Jack McQuillan and John Nerney. And Frank White got the goal for Sligo. 2-12 to 1-8 Aidan on the 20th of July 1947 in a rain and windswept Ballina, James Stevens Park. Roscommon beat Sligo by 2-12 to 1-8.
Very good. So moving on to the 2010, of course, Fergie's first year in charge of the seniors, and what a start to the senior ranks for him, winning the Connacht title in 2010. And of course we've always spoken here about the type of man he is and the type, how he can get the best out of players. But I suppose he had a great crop of players that year, hadn't he?
Well, he had, and you know, Aidan, I think the Roscommon players deserve great credit because they epitomised Roscommon tradition of punching above your weight. It was the whole was greater than the sum of its parts, because Sligo probably on paper had a better team. You know, they had beaten Galway after replay. They beat Mayo. So Sligo were going into that game as 4-1 on favourites. You know, they had like beaten Galway and Mayo to go into the Connacht final. You know, it was a serious piece of work done by them. And they had Eamon O'Hara, Sean Davey, you know, they had David Kelly, was a great footballer at the time, you know, he was a great corner forward, and he had a great chance of a goal in the second half, and Geoffrey Claffey made a save, brilliant save, and the papers talk about it being the turning point. But I would say Roscommon have had better teams that didn't win Connacht championships than that team. You know, it was a hard working team, and it goes to show that the collective unit, that the whole can be greater than the sum of its parts. And it was a clear example of the underdog winning a final. And myself and yourself have spoken about underdogs winning finals in the past. And the game was in Castlebar on the 18th of July 2010, coming up to 10 years now. And of course, the headline of the paper was Rossi's Rise and Shine. And that was a reference to Donny Shine's.
What a game he had. That's when he really announced himself at senior level, wasn't it? Of course, he has been playing really well for Clan over the years, but I think that was his shining moment, really, with that day down in Castlebar, because he was impeccable at free taking that day, wasn't he?
Well, he was brilliant for the minor team in 06, and he copper fastened his place and secured his place in Roscommon folklore as a legend, on that occasion. He scored 10 points in that match. He scored 6 from frees, 1-45, and 3 from play. And of course, we'll all remember that great point he scored at the end to win it from a free way out on the left-hand side, you know. And Donny Shine was peerless. But it goes back to the, you know, we've spoken as well before about the importance of a quality free taker. They're worth their weight in gold. They can carry a team. It's like a rugby team. If a rugby team's kicker has an off day, generally they're in trouble. Same with Gaelic football. Somebody who can punish a team who commit a lot of fouls and scoreable positions from frees, and Donny Shine did that day in Castlebar to score 10 points in
under
total.
Pressure.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Like, in 14 points to 13, as I said, 4-1 outsiders. Donny Shine, tremendous. It was 10 points to 6 at half time in favour of Roscommon. Roscommon had the wind. Kevin Walsh was the Sligo manager. Sligo started very sluggish in the game by all accounts. Roscommon were a bit like the under 21 team in 78. They were tenacious, they were tigers, they fought for everything. Carol Mannion and Michael Finnern did very, very well at midfield, and we give them great credit. There a couple of, last week I think we spoke with Michael Finnern, and of course Carol Mannion was on our team of the last 25 years at midfield. So Carol Mannion and Mick Finnern were tremendous, and it meant that the Sligo midfielders, Stephen Gilmartin and Tony Taylor, were both taken off, Aidan. And then to bring Eamon O'Hara. Eamon O'Hara that year was coming on to 35 years of age. He was 35 later that year. So he started at half forward, and they had to bring him out to midfield early in the game because of the dominance of the Roscommon midfield. And also the Roscommon half forward line of David Keenan, Cathal Craig and David O'Gara were brilliant in terms of mopping up breaking ball or loose ball around the middle. You know, so Shine got 6 points in the first half. And made it 10-6. So Hara went to midfield, and then Sligo came back into it in the second half, Aidan, and would you believe they got 4 points in a row, and Sligo levelled it up, you know. And Roscommon looked like they were going to fade because Sligo had the breeze, and Sligo had beaten Roscommon by 7 points in the league just a few months before that, and Roscommon had got relegated to Division 4. So like, Roscommon were coming from a very low ebb, and Fergal O'Donnell really, you know, he rallied his troops, he trained them very, very well, he put the belief into them, and Roscommon pulled off a tremendous victory. And Johnny Giles always talks about it, and how a year is a long time in football. And just a year before that, in Castlebar, in Fergal's first year as Roscommon manager, Roscommon got absolutely annihilated by Mayo in the first round of the Connacht Championship. I think it could have been 4-15 to 10 points. It was just a tremendous hammering. And we were thinking to ourselves, the noughties had been a very bad decade for us. You know, after the 0-1 Connacht final, apart from the 0-3 campaign where we got to, you know, the quarter-finals. You remember with Frankie Dolan scoring all the... That proved to be...
Because I suppose really in 2001, that was the year that we would have said, now that, you know, we're going to have... The good times are here. Like, we kind of thought with the players that we had that year that we could push on and win more after that, but it just didn't turn out that way.
Well, 0-1 and 0-3 proved to be false dawns, you know, unfortunately for us, because we lost a lot of quality players at the time. You know, we lost, you know, Paul Noon didn't play an awful lot after 0-1, unfortunately. We lost Frankie Dolan, Frankie Graham, Nigel Dineen. A lot of really good players. John Hanley didn't play after that. You know, Roscommon lost players that they needed very badly, you know, in the noughties. Yeah. A lot of experience. Like Seamus O'Neill struggled with a bit of injury as well. I know Seamus played for a long time, but Seamus was brilliant for us, you know. And in the noughties, from 0-3 really up to about 0-10, those 7 years in were... seven very, very difficult years as a Roscommon supporter. You know, we'd, like in 03, we got to the quarter final. In 04, lost the Connacht final, to Mayo. Then 05, lost to Galway, or Mayo rather, and then lost to Loud in the qualifiers. Remember up in Drogheda. 06, I think in 06, we got hammered by Meath in the qualifiers. I can't remember if it was Galway or Mayo that beat us that year. 07, Sligo beat us in the first round of the championship. Cathal Craig scored a great goal. We were in a winning position in 07, and we got hammered in the second half by Sligo, and they won the kind of final. But I remember Cathal Craig scored an amazing goal that day, in off the crossbar at the graveyard end. And then we lost the qualifiers to Kildare up in the Hyde. It was at that match. Could have won it, but 08 then we got beaten by Galway. Mixer Ryan was the manager for a short time. And then the qualifiers, we lost that as well, in 08. 09, we got hammered by Mayo in Castlebar. And I'm trying to think who beat us in the qualifiers. I can't just think of it off the top of my head, but we didn't really go anywhere in 2009 either. But 2010 sort of sparked a revival for Roscommon, you know, and Fergal O'Donnell was the chief architect of that. Won the game eventually by 14-13. Shawnee McDermott had a really good game in the backs, marking David Kelly. Jeffrey Claffey from Castlereagh made an outstanding save from David Kelly on the 55th minute. David Kelly, he was from Tubbercurry. He was one of the best footballers in the country in his position at the time, at corner forward. Yeah. He was a really, really good player, like David Kelly was. You know, Mayo man Alan Costello was to the fore for Sligo. He scored 6 points. He was a really good player. He transferred from Mayo, and he played well for them. Of course, Eamon O'Hara. Then they had the old guard, like Noel Maguire was there as well, you know, and he was in the backs. Johnny Davey. You know, Sligo had some very good players. They had beaten Galway, beaten Mayo, and then they were managed by Kevin Welch, and then Roscommon just ambushed them in McHale Park. Again, another Mayo venue for the game. The only two Connacht Championship finals ever between Roscommon and Sligo. Both played in Mayo, Ballina and Castlebar, so Roscommon won that game. And that was probably our first win in Castlebar in any match since 1986, you know, when we beat Mayo in that famous game in Castlebar. So, Roscommon got the breaks, got the breaking ball and scraps around the middle of the field, and Roscommon's tenacity was credited to them, you know, and especially the half forward line, O'Gara, Keenan and Craig, they're winning the ball, the breaking ball, and it turned out to be a great day for Roscommon. They won 14-13 heading in the end, and Donnie Shine was the man that kicked the vital scores for Roscommon that day. And the team was, in goals, Jeffrey Claffey, Castlereagh, Shawnee McDermott, Western Gales, was right cornerback. The full back and captain was Peter Domnican, who of course was on the minor team in 06. Left full back was Stephen Ormsby from St. Foyles, and he was on the minor team in 06 as well. And Stephen didn't play an awful lot after that, but he was very good that year. Right half back was Cathal Dineen from Tulsk, or from, played for Castlereagh. I think he plays with the Scammon Gaels now, Aidan, your team.
Yeah, he's a good player as well.
Yeah, Nigel's brother.
That's his own team in town now as well, doesn't
he? Yeah, fair play to him. He had a good game. And he was the brother of Nigel's. Centre half back was Sean Purcell from Boyle. And left half back was David Casey from Boyle. And David Aidan had a tremendous game that day. He went forward at every opportunity and he had a brilliant game, David Casey. I think he got a point as well, but he was fantastic. Then David Casey played in the 03 team as well. He was full back with Tommy Carr's team in that great campaign in 03. Then midfield was Michael Finner and Carol Mannion. Michael Finner and St. Dominic's.
Great midfield. Brilliant, great midfield combination.
Yeah, very hard working. Two very honest players. That was a very honest team, that team, you know.
That was a tall midfield as well, really, wasn't it? Massive. But Carol Mannion is no small man.
No.
But when you think of Michael Finner from St. Dominic's, a huge presence in midfield as well, wasn't he?
Brilliant, yeah, and we spoke with Michael last week. You know, when Roscommon needed, like in the barren times, in the late, from say 05 to 10, 11, in the barren years that Roscommon had, Michael Finneran soldiered for Roscommon year in, year out. And he was very consistent. He gave everything in every match and he deserved, and I'm delighted he won his Connacht Championship in 2010. He epitomised everything that was good about Roscommon, Michael Finner did. Honesty of effort, commitment, dedication, and gave it all, you know. And he was there in 2010. He was still there in 2015. He came on in the last game of John Evans's era against Fermanagh, I think down in Enniskillen, if I'm not mistaken. He came on as a substitute. That was his last sort of year for Roscommon. So Carol Mannion was the midfielder. Then David Keenan from St. Barry's was right half forward. He was on the minor team in 06. Another man from the 06 team was David O'Gara, brilliant player, strong as an ox, centre forward, Roscommon Gaels. And then Cathal Craig, left half forward from Western Gaels. Right full forward, John Rogers from Strokestown. Full forward, Donny Shine from Clannagale. And then left full forward, Gerard Heenahan from Castlereagh. Then subs that came on was Kevin Higgins, came on from Western Gaels. Colm Garvey from Kilmore came on. Jonathan Dunning came on from Clannagale for David O'Gara. Of course, Jonathan Dunning was on the Roscommon squad in 2001 when Roscommon won the Connacht Championship. So Jonathan
serious
is...
Player.
Yeah, he's two Connacht Championships. Fair play to Jonathan. He was a link to that 2001 team. And he's a good servant to Roscommon as well. And then Paul Garvey from Kilmore, he came on for Cathal Dineen late on. So, yeah, and that's about it. Like, Roscommon won 2010, and I suppose we couldn't really let the occasion go by reminiscing about the late great Dermot Earley, 10 years.
That's right, it's his anniversary
year, Dermot Earley won the when people think about Roscommon football, Dermot Earley is the first thing that comes to mind. For you talk about somebody from Malinhead to Mizzenhead, and you mentioned Roscommon football, and 9 times out of 10 it'll be Dermot Earley. And lovely man.
They're on about naming the roundabout there at Casey's. They're on about naming that after him. Wouldn't that be a nice tribute as well?
Definitely. And I just had a chat with my dad here last night, Aidan, and we were just talking about that. And he made a point which I thought was a fair point. He said that Casey's roundabout is such a famous roundabout now in Roscommon that everybody knows Casey's roundabout so well that it might be a shame to change Casey's roundabout. But that to name the roundabout on the closest roundabout sort of to the Castlereagh side over on the other roundabout coming in on the Circular Road which would have been the nearest one to Dermot's area of Roscommon, to name
that's
that one
another point.
You know,
because
Casey's roundabout, and I was for naming Casey's roundabout after Dermot, but he made a point I thought was a good point, that Casey's roundabout is so well established now that it would be a pity, because it'll always be Casey's roundabout, do you know what I mean?
I think the reason they were saying about Casey's roundabout is because it was the nearest one to the Hyde, and point of view. But I see where your dad has come from as well, in fairness.
Yeah, and people that wouldn't be interested in football would know it as Casey's roundabout, you know.
It's just
Casey's roundabout for so long that I think it'll find it hard to change it from being Casey's roundabout, you know, even though it's the Dermot Early roundabout. Whereas there's a few roundabouts in the town, and definitely, like, there should be a street named after Dermot Early. You know what I mean? That's what I would say. But, the roundabout out towards, is it Walsh's Shop out that country? Do you know?
That's right, yeah.
Wouldn't that be a nice roundabout to call him after, Dermot Early?
That's it, yeah.
You know, because that's the first one on the racecourse road there, you know?
Yeah, and it's nice to have a tribute to do something like that on at the 10th anniversary of his passing. And of course, he had an all-star winning son, of course, Dermot Jr. as well, that star had many a great game for Kildare as well. But what a player, and you know, but what a man as well he was. I never had the honour of meeting him now, but you know, I think there was pictures of Donnie Shine getting being presented with a county medal by Dermot Early, little things like that. But you know, you go a long way before you'd find anyone saying bad about him as a player and as a man. But I suppose being a soldier as well, you know, in the Defence Forces and that will be what a leader. Yeah. He was as well.
But I think the greatest tribute we can make to Dermot Early is that he was a gentleman, Aidan. You know, he played football in the right way. He encouraged people to play football in the right way. He was a sportsman. He was so respectful of everybody. He was a leader. He was somebody people look up to. I'm sure any of the players that played for Roscommon must have been such a privilege to play with Dermot Early on that team, you know. And he deserved an All-Ireland medal. There's no question. He was one of the greatest footballers of all time. I was fortunate that he trained us in 1992 in the minor. He took a couple of training sessions for us, with us, which was lovely, you know what I mean? And even as a kid, I remember he came down to Rooski one night and to give a training session. And in all the matches we played in the minor that year, I remember before the kind of final in 92 in the minor we were in Briefy House, outside Castlebar, and he gave us a speech before the game, and he says, lads, you're all nervous now. And we said, we were. He says, look, that's very, very good. You need to be nervous. I'd be worried if you're not nervous. You got to be nervous because that's so important of pre-match build-up.
It's how you channel that nervous.
Yeah, and he told us to go out and enjoy the game, enjoy the occasion, and just to give it everything. I remember we gave it everything, and we won Aidan by a point. You know, we were up against a very strong Mayo team. They'd beaten us by 20 points in the league, but on that one day, we just like the whole was greater than the sum of its parts. But I remember we got back to Briefy House after the game, and I can remember Dermot Early giving us another speech. And do you know something, Aidan? The joy that he had for us winning. I can just see him still. He had the joy that was in him. Like, it was an emotional occasion. Like, you know, they came in and we were sitting down for our meal and he was with us. And he made a speech, and he was so happy. You know what I mean? Of all the 92 celebrations after winning the Connacht Minor final, which was brilliant, we were all happy and all our mentors were happy. But I'd say Dermot Early was the happiest man connected with the team. He was the happiest man. And, like, it was just unreal. You know what I mean? The care he had for us he wasn't a selector or anything, but he was, Dole O'Brien had brought him in as an advisor, you know? And he did the same before the game at Croke Park. So it was a privilege to know him, or briefly. Like, I didn't know him as a person, really. I just had an acquaintance of him when he was involved with the minor team in 92. And looking back on it, it was great. And he presented us with the medals then later on that year as well. So, Lord have mercy to Maiden. One of the great men of Roscommon of all time. You know, and he's 10 years gone now this week. Yesterday, or the 23rd of June, is his 10th anniversary. You know, so Lord have mercy to Dermot Early.
What a legend.
Yeah.
But I suppose really there's two things we kind of have to mention before we wind up. And one would be, I suppose, to extend our sympathies, of course, as we know, Garda Colm Horkin was killed in action there last week, in his line of duty. Tough time for his family, tough time for the Garda force, and of course his relatives and close friends. But, you know, we heard a lot over the last week how highly thought of he was as a person, but also as a guard. And of course he achieved a lot in football as well, playing for Charlestown, and also he represented Mayo in at under 21 level. So a great man, a great guard, as I say, and
you know, but a good leader as well, you know, and very highly thought of. So I just thought it'd be nice to kind of remember him in this show as well. I know, you know, a great GAA man as well. I suppose it's something that we wouldn't have known about him until it was mentioned in the last, you know, over the, in the last week that he played for Charlestown.
Yeah, Aidan, and you know something, last Thursday when the news came through that Colin was killed, and I didn't know the man, but yeah. I'm sure, like everybody in Roscommon, Mayo, the country, I think we were all devastated. I think there was a darkness hung over the whole country last Thursday, waking up to that a great man, a great servant of the state, of people, he served the people, and he gave his life in service of us, you know, the state, and all the tributes that have been paid to him. I don't know him. I didn't know him, but like his dad, and you know, he was watching the racing with his dad before he went out on duty, and he was a great footballer. Played for Mayo, as you said, in 21 with Charlestown. They won the Connacht Club Championship back in, I think, 2002, and he was a great footballer for many, many years with Charlestown. And just listening to the tributes and the esteem in which he was held in Castlereagh and in Roscommon, Balladreen, all that area. You know, like Dermot Early, what shone through was just his goodness and his kindness and his passion for life and for sport and for helping people, you know, and the GAA, like, you know, and Colm Harkin was like, you know, he's like so many people out there serving the communities. They put.
If you're a local group or club, Roscommon PPN is there to help you. If you are a member of a local group or club that wants to join others in working for the well-being of the people of County Roscommon, then joining Roscommon Public Participation Network can help you through sharing information, capacity building, communicating effectively with the County Council, and influencing local government policy and services. Your group can join the 320 others already registered. For more information or to join, log on to www.roscommonppn.ie or call 090-66-66735.
Corrib Oil Service Station for the best value home heating oil, diesel and petrol prices. Don't forget to visit our newly opened deli counter. Find us on the Racecourse Road, where we are open 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. daily. Contact us on 090-66-27766.
Jerry Glynn Carpentry Roscommon. Bespoke interiors, kitchen and wardrobes, second fixings and flooring. Telephone 086-102-0094.
Looking for quality health products and gifts for that perfect occasion? Then look no further than Jurena's Health and Gift Shop, Society Street, Ballinasloe, County Galway. Feeling the need for renewed energy? Then here at Jurena's we have a range of vitamins and supplements to get you back on track. Wondering what gift to get for that birthday, housewarming or farewell party? Wonder no more, as we will find you the perfect product the minute you step in our shop door. Want to browse online? Then you can find us at www.jurenasgiftshop.com or call 090-646-585 or message us on Facebook at Jurena's Health Store. We're open 6 days a week, so why not drop into Jurena's Health and Gift Shop on your next day out?
Bonavox Hearing Specialists supply and fit the world's best hearing aids at just $1,998 a pair, including the grant and a 4-year supply of batteries. We guarantee to have the best prices in Ireland. Free phone Bonavox on 1-800-480-888.
To Go Superstore in Roscommon Retail Park. We are carrying school items, copy books, hardbacks, school bags and kids craft. We also have a huge range of birthday party items, hen party, greeting cards and named gift items, as well as household, toys, toiletries and picture frames. That's To Go Superstore in Roscommon Retail Park.
Heinz
Queen's Pharmacy, Castle Street, Roscommon. Contact us on 09066 34147. We offer a wide range of in-store services. We also offer online loyalty points, so log on today to heinzpharmacy.ie. That's Heinz Pharmacy, servicing the community of Roscommon. Contact us on 09066 34147.
County Roscommon Disability Support Group, Darren.
Anybody under 65, people with disabilities suffering from CVA, which means stroke, or physical sensory, which are used, please come and join our activities. We can teach you or work with you, whatever your needs are. Ring 09066 25852. You can meet us one-to-one. We give you a nice cup of tea and a cup of biscuits. We'd love to meet you.
County Roscommon Disability Support Group, Darren. Log on to their website, rsg.ie.
Very welcome back to Sport View Extra here with myself, Aidan Raftery, and the show's as always kindly sponsored by Heinz Pharmacy here in Roscommon Town. Well, as you heard earlier on in the show, the interview with regards to the Tour de County, for Crumlin Children's Hospital. We have another event, two people that have taken up a challenge in aid of Crumlin's Children's Hospital. It's called Ryan Andrews and Michaela O'Neill. There was a launch for the CMRF Crumlin Abseil Challenge. So the information I got was Dancing with the Stars participant and actor Ryan Andrews and partner primary school teacher Michaela O'Neill are launching this year's CMRF Crumlin Abseil Challenge. Ryan and Michaela will be going to new heights on the 18th of September when they abseil off the roof of Croke Park in Dublin by dropping 100 feet off the Hogan Stand. Ryan and Michaela are raising vital funds to support the care and treatment of sick children in Crumlin Children's Hospital, the Children's Hospital Ireland in Crumlin, and you can too. CMRF Crumlin supporters in County Roscommon can join Ryan and Michaela to sign up to take part. And they said, we are delighted to be taking part in the abseil CMRF Crumlin Challenge, says Ryan. It made it real when we put the harness on and looked out onto Killiney Hill to hone our abseiling skills. It's a long way down, to be honest, but we think we're okay with heights. We've never had a problem with it before, but when you're hanging off Croke Park, it's different. It's a different story. So we'll see. I'm saying we'll be okay with heights now, but hopefully I won't back out of it on the day, says Ryan. During Ryan's stint on Dancing with the Stars, he revealed that he was living with a serious health condition that is sometimes misunderstood. With scoliosis, I never really took any notice of it. At the end of the day, it was really just a word on a piece of paper, and that's all that I kind of saw it as. But then it was only as I grew older and got on Dancing with the Stars that it made me realize with all the struggles and pain I was going through, the embarrassment and self-consciousness that I was going through. To be open about it. National Scoliosis Awareness Month takes place every June to highlight the growing need for education, early detection and public awareness about scoliosis and its prevalence within Ireland. Scoliosis is surprisingly common and affects 4 in every 1,000 people. It is more common in girls than boys, and can develop at any time during childhood and adolescence. There's lots of different initiatives throughout the year, but National Scoliosis Awareness Month is important, and I've opened up a bit about it. Well, fair play to him. The amount of people who have come to me and said I have that, I think people thought that there was something wrong with them, says Ryan, and they were nearly afraid to go to the hospital because they didn't want to hear anything wrong. But I'd be like, look, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. It's you, but just in a different way. Everyone is different and everybody has their own troubles. So if you have scoliosis, it depends how you deal with it and adapt to it. And that makes you the person you are, and not just having scoliosis. Ryan adds, Dancing with the Stars was probably one of the best experiences I have ever had. It's something that I have always wanted to do. It was hard, it was physical and daunting, and that's why I did open up about it, because I was struggling at the time. I couldn't really do it because my back was giving me pain. The posture, the lifts, the 10 hours of training every day. So then they said that's why you need to open up and show people that what you're going through through all of this, but that you're still overcoming it. Bernice Condon, Challenge Fundraising Executive with CMRF Crumlin, says, we are delighted that Ryan and Michaela joined us for this year's Abseil, having experienced CHI at Crumlin firsthand. He knows firsthand what children at CHI at Crumlin go through. The Abseil is a great way to get involved in fundraising with challenging your fears. We're calling on our supporters in County Roscommon to sign up to raise vital funds for our little patients. And sign up to join Ryan and Michaela as the Abseil off Croke Park on the 18th of September 2020. CMRF Crumlin hopes to raise 30,000 this year, with spaces limited to 80 people. There is a €70 registration fee, and minimum people must raise an additional 350. Participants will climb down behind the large screen in Croke Park in the Hogan stand before dropping down in a 100-foot Abseil on the pitch. For those interested, please email Bernice at abseil@cmrf.org. Social distancing and all health and safety measures will be adhered to during the Abseil. Ends photo caption. So that's it. So we'd like to say well done to Ryan and Michaela, and we wish them all the best of luck. And hopefully, you never know, between now and then, we might even have them on for an old interview. So that's something to look forward to. Well, now, before we go on to our next song, there's just two very special people that we want to say a happy, we want to give birthday wishes too. That's Jerry Jago and of course Danny, two presenters on Ross FM. Their birthdays are this Friday. So here we go. I have a song especially for them and I'd like to wish them a happy birthday in advance. And it's called, the song I've picked is Radio Gaga by Queen.